two members representing hotels with 50 or fewer rooms, and one member representing hotels with 51 or more rooms. Okay. Two members of community at large, and those members must be residents and registered voters of the city of Morro Bay. So when we do speak with you, if you could please tell us which category you fit in, that would be really helpful to us, because we need to assign you by categories in this particular board. And I see four people here for six positions, so that's going to be interesting. Okay. So what we'll do is we'll start with just each of you introduce yourselves, and if you could tell us then which category you would fit in, and also for the two of you that are on advisory boards, if you are willing to give up your position on the current advisory board to serve on this one, because you can only be on one at a time. Okay? So let's start with Michelle.
First. My name is Michelle Hawkes. I am a regional manager for the Bartfield Motel Group. I would fall under the hotels representing 50 or less rooms, because we have three hotels and they're all 50 or less. I manage the Best Western San Marcos Inn, the El Morro Masterpiece Motel, and the La Serena Inn here in Morro Bay. Is that all the
one quick question. How many rooms is that total?
97 rooms
97
total.
Okay. And you're willing to give up your
position? Yes, sorry. Yes, I would be willing to give up my seat on the city promotions.
Okay. All right. Mike?
My name is Mike Solon. I'm the chief operating officer for Boutique Hotel Collection. We operate eight hotels around California, and we represent the Inner Morro Bay, which is over 51 rooms. It's 98. And that's it.
Okay. Thank you. Karen?
Karen Biagini, representing the Embarcadero Inn, co-owner with my husband, Harold, and in the 50 or less room category.
Okay. And Joan?
Good evening, Council. I'm kind of doing double duty. When my husband applied, his name is John Solu, when my husband applied, he was told on the day that he applied that these hearings would be set, and they actually set them on the day that he's flying to Istanbul. And so he's on a plane right now, which is the reason that he's not here. He's not trying to ignore you, mm-hmm. but he had family business, and you know how tickets are. You purchase them 30 days in advance, blah, blah, blah. So to answer your question, I don't know whether I can speak for him, but I gave everybody a copy of his resume, and that may stand on its own. And then I'm Joan, secondly, and I own the Days Inn in Morro Bay, and am also applying as a citizen at large. And I would be willing to give up my position if there were not enough applicants that would be able to come forward or stand on their own from applying and possibly not being able to make it here.
And how many rooms at the Days Inn now and when you do your remodel?
58. The remodel will be totally separate.
Okay.
It would be a separate building. It's actually a separate space. The remodel, the new... You're talking about the lodge that we're going to build?
How many rooms will you be in
charge
of?
The lodge is going to be 36.
36.
Yeah.
But the
Days Inn will only be 46 at that
46.
Point.
Okay.
So it'll drop to 46.
Okay. All right.
So
who would like to start with questions?
I'm confused. Can I just get clarification, Joan? Both the positions you and John are applying for are for citizen at large, or is one of them representing the hotels?
John's applying as a hotelier.
And what size?
He would be applying as the it's 50 over 50. 50 and over.
50 and over?
Yeah.
The same as okay.
Correct, because the other place is not built yet.
Okay, who'd like to start with questions?
Mayor?
Thank you.
Yes. If I may just give you a couple policies to keep in mind so you do know. About and these are from your policies and procedures. 6.6.2 2.4, because I think there's two members that apply in that situation, is, as a general policy, an applicant shall not be appointed to serve on more than one advisory board, except that a member may also serve on one technical or special purpose committee at the same time. If appointed to another committee, he or she will be expected to resign from one board before being appointed to the other. So this is a general policy, but it does kind of give you that wiggle room if you think this is a special purpose committee and they could, you know, go back out and find it, whatever you desire.
Okay. All right. So as far as the people who are not present, do we want to consider them or schedule? It looks like we're going to have to schedule more interviews anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think perhaps we should just not consider them at this time.
That's been our standing policy, right. And I totally agree with you that we need to abide by that.
Okay. So only people present for now.
I agree.
Okay. All right. And, well, then we don't have to worry about the husband and wife thing, unless that's something you want to consider. If you want to, you know, both of us, all of us knowing Joan and John, do you think that that's a difficulty?
I would find it a difficulty for the community to have two people from the same family on the same committee.
Yeah.
And so I would prefer that we not do that.
Okay. So if we were to pick Joan, it would disqualify
right.
John. And does anybody want to, I'll make a motion that we make an exception because of not only the number of applicants, but the quality of the applicant that does not apply, being Stan. So if anyone is interested in Stan being able to, I think we should make a motion to allow exception to the interview process.
I'd like to wait and see what we get if we reopen, perhaps. And see if the residents, is that fair enough to reopen, sticking to our standard guidelines?
I'm
not
fine.
Trying to discount him, but I'd like to
sure.
see if we stick to our
I'm
rules.
I'm fine with that.
And I did notice Mr. Patel is one of the applicants, but he's not attending tonight. Is there any information from him as to whether he's still interested? Or?
I'm not aware that he's contacted City Hall.
All right, so we have four viable candidates. Who would like to start asking questions?
I have one more question, please, first, before we start asking questions. I think it's going to be for clarification again from Michelle. You stated you're representing three hotels?
Correct.
And so that puts you in a category with over 50 rooms if you're representing all your properties.
Can
so
I choose then to represent one property?
Well, that's what I'm going to ask, because if you're representing three hotels and you have 97 mm-hmm. rooms, I don't see where that puts you in representing one property.
You know what I think might be a good idea is let's see how the interviews go, and then we can juggle and see, because it looks like she could fill either position, so we might want to use her in one or the
technically
other.
Technically, my office is at one hotel.
But technically, you manage three properties, so I'm just trying to make sure it's
right,
balanced.
Yeah.
That's all.
There's
a manager
at each site, and I kind of oversee all of them, so, I mean... You know,
I just want to keep it equitable for everybody and the properties.
Okay,
I think you're going to run across.
Let's see how it goes, and we can't. It is an issue we'll have to discuss, but we might be able to use her one way or t'other. Okay, so some questions you want to start?
I think one thing that the applicant should probably answer is what term they're interested in. Is that correct? Because there are some different terms on there, and some may not want to take the long and rather the short, so if you would just let us know about that sometime in your answers. I just want to preface real quick by saying thank you for being here. I know all of you except Karen, who I met tonight, and you're fine people. You've done a lot for the community. We've worked on the Chamber Board. You're very giving people. Appreciate you being here. For Jacqueline, If I might, how do you see the relationship between community promotions and this new BID?
Michelle, first off.
Michelle,
you were looking at the last name. That's okay. For term, I would like to go for the four-year term, I believe. Is it three or four?
Yeah.
But obviously, I would take a shorter term. There's a difference between the Community Promotions Committee and the BID. Basically, the City Promotions Committee is to promote the city. So you're promoting restaurants, glass shops, hotels, you know, the entire city, not only to your tourism-based, but also to your locals. Whereas I think the BID and the advisory board with the BID is going to be doing a lot more promoting to fill the hotel rooms and to fill your overnight stays, which does trickle down. So there's a lot of, intertwining, which is why I personally wanted to sit on both boards because I felt there needs to be a voice on both sides, and there needs to be some, you know, there's going to be a lot of coordinating between the two boards for a little while. I feel I have an open mind and can be very diplomatic and try to work with everybody for the same common goal. I really don't want to see this advisory board come on and have a lot of divisiveness where they reinvent the wheel. The wheel's been invented, and we need to kind of move forward with what the community promotions has done. But I do think that that's the main difference between a community promotions and the advisory board with the BID is one is going to be a lot more of the overnight stay versus the entire city at large.
All right, thank you. I'll ask one applicant one question, if that's okay. And, Mike, I'm going to ask you if you would agree with that, but I'm going to give you a few minutes to think about it because I know us guys aren't as quick as these women. So I'll give you a few minutes to think about it. Joan, let me just ask you, what's your idea of a marketing plan?
And it happens to fall on the same weekend as our Bird Festival. And I think it would be really, really great to capture some of their business. I think it would be really wonderful to capture some of the wine business with a coast and wine. So there are many, many ways to market our segment here. We're really untapped. We've just barely scratched the surface.
Okay, Mike. You're on. Do you have anything to add to the relationship between community promotions and BID?
Well, I think the BID should operate pretty separately from the community promotions committee. The BID's main function is to promote the hotel stays and tourism within the. There'll be some overlap, but a lot of what the BID will be doing is going to be promoting hotel stays.
And Karen, as Joan talked about, do you have an idea for a marketing plan?
I think she covered the basis of what we're the direction I think the advisory board wants to go in. I think also promoting the attributes of Morro Bay, the area in general, I think might be another good direction that the BID could spend funds on, the natural attributes of Morro Bay.
I think I would like to know how you, I think it's kind of a two-pronged question. They're two very separate questions. Obviously, there's a lot of you interested who have medium to large hotels, and there's no one here representing the 22 and under rooms. So how will you engage the smaller hotels? And Michelle, would you like to start? We'll just kind of go backwards again.
I think that with the smaller hotels, you just need to go out and approach them and work with them. I think that we all still are out for the same clientele. I think that the smaller hotels can compete just as much as the larger hotels. In fact, they've got some extra additional attributes that the larger hotels don't have that the people that are coming into Morro Bay are looking for. You know, honestly, the smaller hotels to me don't seem that much smaller than my property. I see a lot of similarities, and they have the same challenges we have every day of filling our weekdays. And I think that we just need to go out and reach to them and consider them in all of the decisions we make. But I really think that we still have those same challenges, whether they're small or big. I don't think there's going to be a huge difference between a small hotel versus a large hotel in their way of thinking of how to solve these problems.
For the most part, I think, you know, we engineered the sizing just so that we could be somewhat fair to the entire community. But we are just selling hotel rooms, whether you're 12 rooms or 100 rooms. Morro Bay has somewhat of a branding issue more than it does anything else. I mean, Morro Bay, you know, used to be a fishing village. It's not that anymore. So it needs to rediscover its brand and understand what the communication points are. And that's going to translate for 12 rooms, 20 rooms. You have to run a good hotel to get business. You can't get a 20-room hotel that's maybe overcharging in rates and say, well, you know, the tourism council's not doing their job. We have to bring stays into the community, and that's really how it should be defined, the success, not necessarily by how we manage through the relationship with a single entity. I don't know if that makes sense, but...
I think the idea is not to sell the individual properties by any means under anybody's definition of what the BID is going to do. It's going to be to sell the area and the properties and what the area has to offer, and I think that'll carry forth whether you're 12 rooms or 100 rooms.
I think that as part of the BID Formation Committee originally, I think that that was our goal, was to outreach to everybody. And that was part of why we went around walking hotel to hotel, motel to motel, talking to each manager individually or each owner individually. And I think that that's, I think you can take a look at the formation of the BID itself and see that, you know, we understand that outreach is key to having a successful BID. It's one of the reasons why this BID was put through without a single protest, a single formal protest, as opposed to every other city in the county or even the county BID effort, which most of them have struggled. And this went through very quickly as well, I think, because there was outreach done. Even last week, we had another meeting and reached out to some people who might be confused about how to write it on a folio, and they were there, and we all came together on an agreement on how to write it on a folio, which is the bill that you pass across the guest. So I think that we are considering the person.
When the BID was started, to see it come so quickly and come forward shows how exciting it is that everybody wants that. So there is a common goal there, and I think that's what needs to be found, is that common goal, and just and ran with it. And I think you know, in Morro Bay, there's a lot of people that kind of sit back and just kind of fall and tail and watch the chips lay where they may. And so I think it's exciting to get a group of people. I mean, I know there's four, but I know that there was plenty of people that actually applied, just couldn't make it. But I think people are really excited to try to, you know, you have a challenge and you want to overcome it and you want to move forward and, you know, just do the best you can to try to make it. And that's why it's going to be very exciting this first year to try to, you know, it's not going to be overnight. You're not going to see the numbers go up tomorrow, especially with this economy the way it is. But I think that's why it's nice to get a group of people together that can sit down and hash out. And I think it's good to sometimes not have everybody agree, because then that's how you get your best solutions, is by coming out and throwing out crazy ideas and wild ideas and see what works. So that's kind of the challenge. And the excitement part is just how exciting it is that it's moved forward so quickly in Morro Bay. It shows that people are really behind it. Everybody wants their, you know, TOT to go up. The city needs it. And I think that we've got a really great group of people that can come together and really make something happen. And I think that's really exciting as well. And there's a lot of great new ideas that you hear out in the world. So hopefully now this will get formed together and we'll go forward with it. And I'm sure there'll be some bumps and bruises, but that's what makes things successful, is to go out and try.
Yeah, I don't see very many challenges at the very start. The challenge will probably be in year two or so, when you go back and try to assess your value and make really good hard decisions on if the money was well spent or not. That you know, because people will develop some pet projects, or things may work for one particular group of stakeholders and not others. So I think that in the beginning there'll be a lot of emotion and people want to see it successful. But to be good, I think it has to be good over a long period of time, and that's what's I see as the biggest challenge.
A quick follow-up to that, Mike. Do you have a model in your head as far as how do you make that assessment when you're trying to on it? What would be something that would really help you determine if we're being successful here or not?
Yeah, I mean, with all strategy, you want to develop your define what your goals are, develop your strategy, implement, and critique. So you're just going to – it's going to be a continuing process. So without – at the beginning of the committee we wanted to all sit down and discuss what a marketing plan would be, and all of us came up to the conclusion that, well, that's not really a good idea because we haven't formed the committee yet officially yet. So without having enough vetted discussion on what we're trying to achieve and our goals, I don't think I could really just off the cuff say what my benchmarks would be. But you'd have to have them. Obviously we're going to have pretty good benchmarks. We're custodians of some money that needs to be spent properly. So,
well,
Well, I agree that I think the exciting aspect of this going forward is that it has moved fast. I think the way it's structured at this point, trying to pull people in from the community, from the existing chamber, and from different levels of involvement of the properties in Morro Bay, is going to create a board that will look at things from different points of view and offer different points of view in terms of setting up the marketing plans and then being able to follow up how they're affecting, you know, properties from different points of view and levels. I think the challenges, like Mike said, are really going to come further in when we see what's gone forward in the first year and how it translates with what we can, you know, with what we can do with what we have. And I think that we're going to get a board, I would hope that we're going to get a board that's not all involved from one aspect, but that's coming in with some different perspectives with community member at large, chamber, and property owners, and property owners, I think, with different backgrounds, some with more involved in marketing, some with overall operations as owners, and I think that's going to be helpful and exciting in setting up this new board.
Obviously, I think it's pretty exciting that you've got a segment of the business community that's come together and taken on an assessment not only for the betterment of their businesses, but hopefully for the betterment of the community overall through, you know, an increase in TOT through revenue. So I think that that's pretty exciting. But I think that where the challenges are going to lie is the sustainability. The first year of the collection is gauged at 3%, the second year at 2%, so there is some fallback there. So if you see a really heavy push the first year and then maybe the second year, there's a little slowdown in that
right now, especially at this time of year. And I get the effects the next morning as they stay over in my business. How do you propose growing business and helping the hotels as a whole, as you promote this out there, get past the one-night stays to get the return customers? You're going to go out and spend these hundreds of thousands of dollars to promote your industry, all the hotels, and yet I recognize in this industry a lot of people who come and stay one time and don't return. So what idea might you have? And Michelle, I'll start with you.
Lucky one tonight, huh? There's lots of ideas. I think, one, a lot of our festivals we have are all weekend. I think we need to extend those. I think the car show's done a good job of bringing people in on a Thursday. I know that same with the Bird Festival. They've extended stuff out now to Sunday. I think we need to I mean, it's great to add more festivals and to add that. I mean, that's wonderful, but I think we've got a lot on the plate. I know the chamber is very overwhelmed. I think it'd be nice to see things extended out so people can come extra days. I also really believe that we need to, and this is a touchy subject, but I think the conference center is a really great thing that's kind of been moving forward. It gets a lot of that weekday, the working people to come out and have conferences here. I know every conference I go to, my whole family comes, and we all spend money. As well as, you know, your retirees, we all know they can come whenever. Weekdays, we need to really push for that. And I really think we need to do a lot more work also on how, when the people come in, they're perceived, not only at the hotel level, but across the city, and do maybe a big customer service push type of training a little bit, because if people come and they're really happy, then they're going to come back. But if they come and they have a bad experience, they're never going to come back. And I know that's one thing that I push on more of a manager level, is really taking care of the customers and making them happy. And I think if we did that as a city level, it would be really helpful. And there's, one of my priorities is Best Western. We have to do continuing education. Every year we have to do, I have to keep up on educating. And that's one thing that's been brought up a lot with Best Western, is kind of sustaining that customer and making them a repeat customer so that they come back again and again and again and again. And I know that's something in our industry we understand very much, because if you don't have a repeat customer, then your business will not be as successful. So I think if we did it as a city level, well, that would also be very helpful. And getting, I would love to see a lot more of this north-south traffic. I know we've saturated the east, and it's great. I still think they're good, and we need to continue doing advertising over there, but I'd like to see a lot more north-south. You've got people then that are going to take those vacations. They aren't just going to come on the weekends, because I know all of us do pretty well on the weekends. We all need to find that weekday business and get people to stay here and then just keep them happy so they keep coming back. And I really would love to see a push on the Discover Your Better Nature. I think that we have so many things here to offer. There's all this talk about, you know, oh, let's do an aquarium, let's do the heritage, let's do this. That's great, and that's wonderful, but that's not going to happen tomorrow. So we need to do something now, and we need to really push on what we already have to offer. And we have this great city with all these eco-friendly things to do, biking and hiking and, you know, families. We need to push more families to come this way. I mean, we don't see that as much, which I know that they're not always the weekday travelers, but you do get people that will come and travel throughout the week and pull their kids out. So I think that there's a lot of different things that could be done to get those weekdays and get those repeat customers. And going out of state, I know Joan mentioned that as well. That would be nice, too, to get more people that are traveling, you know, extending their vacations and not just coming for one-nighters. And reminding people that they come here, they can go everywhere. They can go to Big Sur. They can go to Solvang. They can do all those things from one location and not have to get in and go overnight and overnight and push without having to get their bags back in and staying in one location. So I think there's a lot of things that can be done to brand our city as a great location for that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think the role of the BID will be more. It will be all marketing. I mean, the responsibility of the marketeer is to get the phone to ring, and after that, the operator has to execute and get the customer coming back. However, I could see us doing citywide promotional events that are, you know, buy two get the third night free, buy two get, you know, or something of that nature, buy three, get the third night free, to try to extend. Some of our hotels have been very successful, buy three, get the fourth night free. Some marketing angles such as that, relationships with Expedia, relationships with some of the online marketing travel agencies that could help us get out of just the east to west, I guess, corridor. Those are some of the things. I'm not sure if we can really get into running other people's businesses, which is what the training would be. So, you know, I would try to define it more towards our marketing role, and that would be our responsibility.
I kind of agree with Mark in terms of with Mike in terms of the BI.
Is that correct? That's a very interesting question. I've been asking myself that for about 20 years. So, you know, it's asked in every hotel that you're ever going to work in if you work as a lodging individual. How do we get that single-time guest back? A lot of it for Morro Bay, I think, has to do with improving our image. And I'm not talking about just our hotels. Excuse me. I'm talking about how we market our city. And I think Discover Your Better Nature is a great start. And also how our city is. I think that improving our image also means improving our product. I think if you take a look at Morro Bay Boulevard now compared to Main Street, you can easily recognize what I'm saying. We've done a very good job now revamping Morro Bay Boulevard all the way down to Dorns, and it looks fantastic. You know, 3 years ago I had a friend come into town, and he came off Morro Bay Boulevard with this very expensive convertible car from Southern California and went through all the potholes and got lost and went down to the rock to the dirt parking lot and made a U-turn and came back on the road that was all bumpy and the harbor walk wasn't there. And I think, you know, he hasn't been back. I mean, we're still in contact. He just hasn't been able to make it back. But when he does, he's going to be very pleasantly surprised. And I think we're on our way to improving our image, improving our product. And I think that with the BID, through marketing, increased revenue, increased room nights, increased TOT through revenue, the city's going to be able to see some changes. The hoteliers are going to be able to see some changes, because as old as Morro Bay Boulevard was, is as old as some of our hotel product is here in town. And when that can be updated because of increased revenue, then it helps everyone.
Okay, I got a couple of questions, and I'm not going to have time to ask them both. Karen kind of touched on this, so I'll start with that. How do you see the relationship of the BID with our promotions committee and with the county VCB?
Well, Well, I think you've got a new agency coming in that's starting fresh, hopefully has some fresh ideas, hopefully employing some fresh ideas, but that isn't going to completely reinvent the wheel, which I think has already been said here. I think we have some very good systems in place that we need to coordinate off of and work off of and promote in a better and maybe more effective way with additional funds. That's the whole idea. So.
John?
How do I see the BID interacting? Is that what your question was?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
The relationship with the Promotions Committee and also the relationship with the VCB.
Well, I think the VCB is reformulating itself. So they're about to have a new director. And thank you. They're about to have a new director, and they're in the selection process for a new director, and I think we're going to see some new, good, strong efforts coming out of the VCB. I think it's going to be a very, very viable entity. I think that those people who are members of the VCB will see definite benefit from that, those people or those businesses or those cities. How do I see us working with the Promotions Committee? I think we darn well better work closely with them. We definitely don't want to reinvent all of their efforts, and I don't think they need to be overlapping on ours either, because I would hate to see either of these two entities wasting their time, spinning their wheels. You know, we already know how hard it is to get wheels to spin. So if we can work in conjunction with each other and push things forward and push things through, I think it just makes for a completely stronger effort as far as marketing and a much stronger city, much stronger business effort all the way across the board.
Okay. Mike? And Mike, question two. I think you had put it large here. Are you a Morro Bay registered voter and resident?
Yes,
you are. Okay.
Yes, I am.
Okay. And that same question, the promo and the VCB.
You know, everybody has a common interest, so I don't really see. Maybe there might be some communication issues, or there might be some issues in which we've not fully vetted our feelings or our strategy that we need to with one another. But I don't really see there being too much of an issue as long as we communicate. So it's not everybody wants to be successful, and we're all defining success by promoting our city in the best light. So,
okay. Michelle?
I think I touched on the
Morro
Bay and the...
Okay, then I'll ask a quick other question, because you did already touch on it. What do you think the effect is of some of our hotel rooms being not as attractive as hopefully they could be? Do you think that the BID is going to be able to help that with the... And I know it's financial... with the smaller hotels, do you think it's going to be able to increase the quality of the rooms that we have to offer? Michelle? This whole thing, but we only have 15 minutes to have our deliberations before we start our next meeting. So
I'd like to ask another question, just because it really tangential.
1 minute answers.
Real quick answers. How are you going to make, because at the promotions level, they've talked about, you know, they're going after a higher income market. How does that affect the small hotel owner who doesn't have the product to go after that, and yet you're advertising up here, won't that kill them down there? So the question is, how do you balance that in your committee? How are you going to make sure that the minority is equally treated?
I think one thing to point out, too, a lot of the hotels that are small are actually the nicer hotels here in town. So there's a handful of them that are actually really small that are actually higher end.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you might be talking more about some of the...
I don't know who I'm talking about, but I know that the, like, just working off of what you're saying, the small guy's having a harder time. How do you make sure you don't market above what he's available to offer?
And that's where I would have to respectfully kind of disagree. I think some of the smaller hotels are actually doing pretty well because they're actually are a smaller hotel, so they only have 6 or 8 rooms to fill. It's a little bit easier than having 30 or 40 rooms to fill. So I think with our marketing, it's going to go out to everybody, and you're going to hit every niche. And, again, I would love to see more of that north-south, out-of-state, not so much your east-west, so that you're actually targeting a little higher incomes.
1 minute, Mike.
Okay, sorry. But there's a report done by Smith Travel Research. You know, everybody's supposed to submit their occupancy and rate. About out of the I guess we have 30, how many entities do we have in here? I know the average size is 32 and there's 900 rooms. So out of all of those rooms, there's about six hotels that actually submit their data. If we could convince everybody to submit the data and then measure ourselves against ourselves, we could show some sort of cause and effect to both the marketing and to reinvestment. Mm-hmm. And you know, maybe we can lend some of that expertise that I'm sure some of the members of the board will have to these smaller operators that, you know, it's their livelihood. I'm from a family of small business owners, so I understand that. We're not going to, you know, we have to represent them. I mean, that's our responsibility is to represent them. But there are travel shows that are bus shows that are, there's plenty of $59 rate business out there nationally that they may not qualify because of this or that. And we could possibly educate them towards that.
Okay. Joan?
Well, I have to agree with both of my colleagues here. I think that, the smaller hotels here are the boutique hotels, and actually it's some of the larger hotels that have lower rates, oddly enough. So when you get a large hotel that has 100 rooms and they have one room occupied during the week, that's a lot more pain to your chest, a lot more pressure on your chest than having six rooms and having one occupied. So I think that maybe the people with more hotel rooms are sitting here for a reason. And I think that no matter what, there will be outreach done, there will be coverage done, and I think, again, it goes back to marketing the city and having a comprehensive marketing plan that really enhances our product that we already have and gets our marketing word out, whether it's the decision is north and south or a push east or a push out of state, whatever the board decides, I think that it's really getting our image out there, because right now we're not doing that with what we have.
Karen?
I agree in essence with what everything's been said before, and again, stressing the fact that it's not a particular product property-wise that we're going to try to sell. It's an area, an ambiance that would go across all markets.
Okay. Thank you very much. We may still have, you know, little quick questions to ask you, but let's talk about it. All right. So what we have here is we have Michelle, who qualifies for either 50 or less or 51 or more. We have Mike, who qualifies for 50 or more. We have Joan qualifying for 50 or less or 51 or more with the new hotel. Both Mike and Joan qualify for at large. And we have Karen with the 50 or less, and she also would qualify at large because she's a resident as well. So we can kind of juggle things around.
I have a comment, and if we don't do it now, I'd like to see us do it formally at City Council later. But I think we need to make a policy decision about people that are in charge of multiple hotels. Mm-hmm. Either they're all going to be considered large or they're all going to be considered individual. But I think it's important.
Okay. Well, how do you feel? I mean, I agree that if they manage several rooms, lots of hotels,
it's lots
several
of rooms.
Hotels, lots of rooms, mm-hmm. then I think that should count as 51 mm-hmm. or more.
Absolutely, I agree.
You all agree? Okay.
Yeah, my legal interpretation, because we do state in our ordinance what the owner is, and if they're all owned by the same party, which I believe they are.
And make sure you're okay with that.
That's correct.
I believe a
previous conversation that was had was that I may not have to step down from Parks and Recs, that would be a decision that you would have to make yourselves, amongst yourselves. I couldn't necessarily make that decision. I mean, I would be willing to do that. Do I want to? I think we have some really important fun things happening in Recs and Parks right now, and I just hate to leave the handle, but, you know, I would do it if you, you know, so saw.
You're also on the chamber board, too, right?
No, as a matter of fact, I am.
Thank you. That's what I thought.
All right, so it looks like with Karen, she would be the person for the 50 or less. She's the one that fits that category.
Are we voting by paper vote, or are voting?
Yeah, we will, but okay. I'm just trying to get those, you know, parameters decided at least before we vote. For Mike, he could be 50 or more, or the at-large. For Michelle, she's going to be the 51 or more. She can't qualify for at-large.
Joan could be 51 or more or at large. And right now, she could be 50 or less. But with the new hotel, that will increase that. And you are going to be owners of both, right? Yeah. Okay. The other thing that we need to decide is if we want someone to, and Michelle had a really good point about serving on both promotions and the bid. And I really liked what she said, that for the beginning at least, it would be really good to have somebody who knows what's going on both committees so that it does create that working together instead of at separate.
Isn't that what our seventh membership is the president, the director of the chamber?
Yes, it is.
And isn't he on both?
Yes.
Yeah, but he's not a voting member.
But
he is on this committee, though.
I don't know. Is he on this? He is on this one.
On this committee, but not on community promotions.
I would like to have 100%, I think, attention and availability given to this committee the first year, I think, and I don't mean to take away from what they have, but I just think that...
No overlap?
Yeah, I would prefer there's no overlap the first year.
Noel, how do you feel?
Well, I definitely think it's important that these groups are closely in touch with each other, especially as campaigns are developed. But I can understand Carla's point there about the amount of effort that's going to be involved with this first year, and I'm comfortable that Mr. Candela from the chamber can help make sure that that's there, and I'm sure both groups will pay close attention to each other as meetings progress.
Rick, you agree?
Okay. Right. And we might even recommend that they meet together.
Sure.
Yeah. Or they on their own may do that periodically.
I just have one other comment, and that's in regards to the designation. And I don't think that a hotelier should be a citizen-at-large appointee, because a citizen-at-large appointee should be a person that's at large.
I agree. Okay. I would like to see the hoteliers represent the hoteliers and citizen-at-large be someone in a business or citizen-at-large. I agree.
All right. If that's the case, then we have... three people at the 51 or more, and we have one person at 50 or less, and we have no citizens at large with our candidates that are here tonight.
Nor 22 or less.
Right.
And can I ask the city attorney a question, please? Did Rob, did you notice this again after that, re-notice the hoteliers after the...
Yes, right off the bat when you agreed to the interview date, our city clerk... put the display ads in the paper, which is usually all we do. But then about a week ago, I want to say a little bit over a week ago, we also sent a letter with the advertisement to all 20 or so, 22 hotels, however many they are. Margie faxed them to all of those hotels.
That was after we hadn't received the applicants.
Yeah, we weren't getting that many, so we thought we'd do an extra.
Okay, so we'll just re-advertise it then?
Yes, if you.
For the positions open, thank you.
Okay, so I think that the ballot that we need to fill out will have one person for the 50 or less and one person for the 51 or more, and we're going to have to advertise for more applicants.
I would like to have this brief discussion about Mr. Grantham's idea that the at-large people should be at-large, and I agree with that, but my original position was that all of these should be hoteliers and that we not even have at-large people, because it's all about hotel money and that they can do what they want with it. So I guess I'm asking philosophically, do we want it to be all hoteliers or do we really see a need for at-large people?
Especially because at this point that would basically disqualify some of our applicants that are here tonight, and obviously they're qualified to and prepared to serve. So I'd have a problem with that at this point as well.
I think it would bring forward a different point of view, and what the heck, why not? I think we keep it on there.
Carla?
Okay. Yeah,
how about one at
you?
Large?
I'd be willing to accept one at this point so we could move forward, but not is
put
that correct?
51 or more.
Oh, 51 or more. I thought you said at large.
So two people qualify for the at large.
Only one.
Two people qualify for the at large.
But there's only one position we're looking at.
Right.
Which means one of the people will be eliminated.
Three people are qualified for the 51 or more.
Mm-hmm.
And the two qualified for the at-large are?
Are Mike and Joan.
Because
Michelle's in Los Angeles.
So we have a problem with the room number.
Mm-hmm. Why don't we change the room number? Move on.
No, I think we need to
The city attorney already interpreted it.
Yeah. We need to go out and beat the bushes and get somebody from a smaller hotel to come in, because they are going to have different issues.
I think the potential, though, if this is possible, would be to adjust from the 50 or less to make that two people at 51 or more instead of just
the bylaws are already accepted.
Oh,
we've already voted
okay.
And accepted it. We've already approved these. I hate to vary when we're going to open this back up anyway.
Rob, is that number where the decision-making comes in?
What number?
It's 50% of the total.
For bylaws, you can change your bylaws at any time.
Okay. All right, so you want to do that, make it two at 50 or 51 or more?
Not if we're going to open it back up for one, interviewing one person. We're going to open it back up to interview one person.
We'd be interviewing for a small hotel and an at-large.
So if we're going to open it back up, then why are we going to change our bylaws?
Well, we're not. Oh, yeah, we are.
Yeah.
Okay.
What? No, but I did want to, I mean, we did come up with some of these numbers pretty arbitrarily when we made the proposal for 2050-90. The root of the law is that I believe for a BID, it's representative by revenue or hotel rooms when there's a vote to either accept it or not accept it. So it seems logical that the 51 and up is represented at a higher rate. Otherwise, and especially when you impose the multiple owner rule, Patel owns a couple hundred rooms in the city. They have over 100. I have 100. There won't be enough representation at the top end of the market, which I think is what drives the revenue. And if that portion of the market is not satisfied, not saying that they will not or won't be,
okay,
there's potential for it to be voted out. Thank you.
We got to hurry. So what do you think? Do you want to do that at 51 or more? Is that agreeable? Have two at 51 or more? Yeah? Okay. Carla, you all right?
So just to clarify, two at the higher end, one in the middle, and one at the bottom,
right.
And then two at large.
Right.
One of which we're going to appoint a hotelier to.
Right. If we do that, we can put all three of these people on.
Yeah. Does that work for you, Mr. Grantham?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I was only thinking one if we were having a problem filling.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Yeah. So we can appoint all three of these people, all four of these people tonight, and two of you are going to have to resign from your current boards.
And can we actually, Mr. Schultz, change the bylaws tonight?
I can bring that back to you. I'm not sure. Explain again what each position is going to be and how long the term is, so we've got that down.
Okay.
Okay.
Talking about changing one of the medium to one of the to two large and one medium.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What are the what?
And who has how long of a term?
Yeah, that's I think what I. I understand you're going to be appointing these four people to the bid.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And just let me know what category they are fitting in at this
okay.
point in time and the term.
Okay. So Karen's going to be the 50 rooms or less. And that term, how many terms have we got? I'm sorry, I haven't paid attention to that. I don't
know. Are we staggering at 1, 2, and 3 years or just 2 and 4?
I would do 2, 3, and 4.
2, 3, and 4.
2, 3, and 4.
2, 2, and 2, and the executive director is always on. So two
okay.
would get 4, 2
Karen,
would get
you
three,
get your
and
choice.
Two, get
2, 3, or 4 years. Okay, Karen's on 4. Okay. All right, so then we've got, who do we want to be the two for the 51 or more? And who? Joan and Mike are available for at-large. Who do we want for at-large?
Joan was the one who, they both applied for at-large, I guess.
Well, we'll have one at-large person. And we'll have one at-large who's also a hotelier. Yes. Okay, so we agreed Joan for the at-large? Okay, Joan, how many years? How many years?
There's two or three.
Large?
There's 2 years or 3 years, right?
Let me ask this question before I do. Do I have to resign prior to being sworn in? Prior to being sworn in, do I have to resign?
Yes.
Prior to being sworn in.
Right. You're not being sworn in tonight, though.
Right. When would we be being sworn in like a month?
No, less than a month.
Less than a month.
Get the board
together.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
One at large.
Yes. We will have one small hotelier, one at large, and hopefully we'll We'll announce that again when our meeting starts, because obviously we've lost control. Okay, we're having a short break before our regular meeting starts.
Give them the report to you.
Howdy.
I thought you guys were going to talk about the closed session.
I asked Andrea, said she would bring up a firefighter. She said, no, not right now. She said, so just go all over. I said, okay, what are we going to do? She said, we'll talk about it.
Okay. Green shirt?
Well, you're a green guy.
It's good. See, I can wear that color green. That's a good green. I like it.
Good. I can't think of it.
You may win.
Good evening. And welcome to the Tuesday, May 26th meeting of the City Council. Let the record show that all council members are present, and we'll begin our meeting with a moment of silence. Thank you. We don't have anyone special to lead the pledge. Mr. Livick, since you're in the front row, would you like to lead us in the pledge?
Sure. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. All right, and we do have our business person tonight. We have Piwat from the Jasmine Thai restaurant. Piwat, would you please come and tell us a little bit about your wonderful restaurant? And I've been there. It is.
Good evening, Mayor, Peter, and Council. My name is Piwat Poon Sopin. My wife, Shada, and I are own of the Jasmine Thai cuisine. We are family owner. We are located at 355 Morro Bay Boulevard, across the street, Bank of America. We open 7 days a week, Monday to Friday, 11 to 9, and Saturday, Sunday, 12 to 9. We have been in a current location at Morro Bay for 2 years. Before, we were in Atascadero for 2 years. We love having all business in Morro Bay so much. We actually become Morro Bay homeowner, so we are here to stay. We are currently the only Thai restaurant in Morro Bay now. We serve most of the Thai specialties like Pad Thai, curry, eggplant, and another many. We also have BNY available. We can make any off or menu item from takeout, or you either walk into order or just give us a call and come in pick it up. Everything that we serve is made fresh to order. Our phone number is 772-5988, and our address again, 355 Morro Bay Boulevard. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to be featuring some local restaurants because I think a lot of us don't appreciate the cuisine that we have here, and certainly Jasmine Thai is some of the best. So thank you very much for being here. Okay, announcements. I don't know if I'm going to steal Rick's thunder.
Service that take care of kids with fetal alcohol syndrome. They're the same people that come here once a month to the community center and do free blood work and consultations with people, which is the fourth Monday of every month. So they do a lot of wonderful things. And so I passed out brochures and set them on the chairs out there if anybody would feel like they want to grab one and maybe do a tax-deductible donation to a Community Action Partnership. And just real quickly and kind of chronologically, Friday morning I went to a Veterans Memorial Day celebration put on by Assemblyman Sam Blakesley in San Luis, and thank you to him. It was wonderful, and a little belated happy Memorial Day to all the vets and families of vets. After that, went to the Warden's Meeting, and just to give you a few little stats, we have 6,500 inmates at the facility down the road. That's the third largest one in the state. 21,000 of our statewide inmates are illegal aliens, and the feds only give us 11 cents on the dollar to house them. We have 170,000 California state inmates statewide, and the discussion continues regarding the possibility of selling San Quentin to help with the budget. So, and there's also a federal mandate, and it's to spend $62.5 million on a new 50-bed psychiatric facility on the grounds at CMC. It creates a little bit of controversy because they're going to actually exceed what are our community standards for the folks that live out there. Again, about veterans, there's going to be a Texas Hold'em tournament at Sea Pines Golf Resort, $50 per player. I'm looking for the date. I know it's here. I saw it. Pardon me? Saturday, May 30th. Check in at noon. And this is put on by a group that's going to help buy a van to transport veterans to different veterans facilities. So very worthwhile. Do I have a phone number here to give out? Yes. Excuse me. It's 528-5252, and it's a wonderful fundraiser, so hope you can help out with that. One last thing regarding the EOC and an affiliated event that's going to take place that's going to go toward the senior health services. And it's an afternoon of Epicurean delights, and it's going to be at the historic Chapman House by the Sea in Shell Beach, Sunday, June 7th, from 11:30 to 3:30. Award-winning food, wine and beer, live music, spectacular views, and a silent auction. Tickets are $100. So, and all those proceeds will go towards senior health screening for our residents and our senior citizens in San Luis Obispo County. Thank you.
Okay. I did forget one announcement. Right before our meeting, we had a special meeting, and for our new business improvement district, we appointed Mike Casola, Karen Biagini, Joan Solu, and Michelle Jacquez. And we do need two more people for this committee. It's an advisory committee that will be doing marketing and promotion of our community, and one of them needs to be an at-large person. So anyone out there who has an interest in that is eligible. So we will be putting out an advertisement for more applications. The other position that is still open is for a hotel unit that has 22 rooms or less. So if you fit that capacity and are interested, we would very much like you to apply. Okay, Noah?
Thank you. And I am the city's representative on the Air Pollution Control District Board, which has been doing quite a bit of work in the county regarding air quality. And we are blessed in San Luis County with very excellent air quality, especially compared to other parts of the state. But even so, we do have some challenges, especially at different points of the year. And one of the things that the Air Pollution Control District has done is working with the EPA, they've developed a notification system that allows people with sensitivities to air pollution or other issues to be notified through email, through page, or through text about the air quality on every day of the week. And fortunately here in Morro Bay, we do have a monitoring system that the APCD updates every day and manages. So this is an opportunity that's available now through a website. You can sign up or by calling the APCD. The website is enviroflash.info. But actually, I would recommend you call APCD at 781-5912 if you'd like more information, or you can contact me and I can steer you in that direction. As on another note, too, besides this daily forecast, which is helpful to some, they are starting a program that's focusing on schools because the developing youth seem to be the most sensitive to potential problems, and we do have some challenges.
The IWMA, I'm trying to remember which meeting I went to. There's been so many. The Integrated Waste Management, and as I had mentioned last month, and we'll bring back, we passed the county ordinance for the latex paint take back, and that will, more information will be coming in the next month about what that will entail. You'll be able to return up to 2 gallons of household latex paint to retailers in your community rather than having to take it to the hazardous waste disposal, which will make it a lot more convenient for you than having to wait till Saturdays to go down to our waste disposal at the city yard. So I will bring the rest of that information as that ordinance was just passed at our last meeting, and we'll go into place real soon.
Okay, and I'm going to add one more thing to my previous announcement. Because of our appointments tonight, we're going to have openings on our Promotions Committee and our Recreation Parks Committee. So those are two others that we're going to need applicants for. And if you are interested in either of those, please look for the notice and pick up an application. Okay, our city reports tonight. Harbor, Rick.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Apparently we're having a brevity contest, so I'm going to start out and set a low mark here. It was a very busy weekend on the waterfront. At one point Sunday afternoon, I know that almost every kayak in the bay was rented, and boat launch ramp was full. The yacht club was doing their small boat sail races, and the rock parking lot was full. It was a busy weekend at the beach, even with cool weather. So all went well. Our lifeguards were on duty, and everything went well. No significant contacts there. Thank you.
Okay, Recreation and Parks, Joe.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Staff recently received a letter from the State of California Department of Recreation and Parks Department, and it was from the Office of Grants and Local Services. And just a touch follow-up with what's happening with the bond and the monies for the tennis courts. The state is starting to reimburse some grantees for project costs, which is good news, and those are costs that occurred prior to December the 17th, 2008, and they're also starting to reimburse eligible projects that are liquidating at the end of this year, which is June the 30th, 2009. So they're starting to reimburse some of those expenses, and they also are looking at extending some of the deadlines that some of the projects have. Our monies will be expiring in 2012, so we have we have more time. But as they free up the monies, we may be able to get an extension on our time for our project. Also, the Recreation Parks Commission is having a joint meeting with the Harbor Advisory Board. That'll be scheduled for June the 4th. That is at 6 o'clock. The Recreation Parks Department, the Recreation Parks Commission is going to be meeting at 5 for a quick meeting. We've got some business to take care of, and then we will go into a joint meeting with the Harbor Advisory Board. This last weekend was the first of about 12 to 13 tournaments that will be happening at our softball diamonds. We hosted an ASA Senior League tournament that came through. That about 8 teams, very successful. We're waiting to hear the feedback from the chamber about the package deals that we had sent out earlier in the year. And locally, you had the Morro Bay Girls Softball All-Star Teams competing in the San Luis Obispo tournament. Our girls 12 and under took first place, and the girls 10 and under took second place. So if you see the girls out there, please extend a congratulations to all of them.
That's great. Okay, public services. Bruce?
Thank you, Madam Mayor and Council. Just a couple things. We finally finished Morro Bay Boulevard, and we'd like to thank the merchants and all the travelers for their patience and
That's worth applause.
Inconvenience. Just some minor work left, but nothing major, just cleanup work. And then lastly, the housing element is available on the city's website. It's on the very first page under announcements and news. Anybody can download that. We are having a council meeting in consideration of that on June 8th, and there'll be three other meetings after that to discuss the housing element. But just to let everybody know, the next meeting when the council will be considering it for submittal for a pre-review to the State Department of Housing and Community Development will be on June 8th, and the document's available on the city website.
Okay, thank you. Noah, you said you had another announcement.
Yeah, I promised Ms. Burlingame that I would give a gentle reminder that the trolley season did start this last weekend, and we've got some exciting options there, including the Summer Youth Pass, which is $25, and it spans from this past weekend all the way through Labor Day and includes unlimited rides on both Dial-A-Ride and the trolley. So we're hoping to see a good amount of ridership there, and there is a potential business sponsorship opportunity that Ms. Burlingame is managing, and she requested that I invite any businesses to give her a call if they'd like some information. We've made it much more affordable
with this. So I put it in my reelection account. No, I'm just kidding. What I did, went down to Albertsons and got 10 $50 gift certificates and took 6 to Del Mar School and gave to Janet Gold to hand out to people she knows who need it. And then Officer Hannibal from our police department got 2 to hand out to a poor soul that might be in a tough spot. And then 2 went to the Community Action Partnership. So even though this person has told me he doesn't want any recognition, I feel I need to publicly thank him for his act of kindness and generosity. Thank you.
It's wonderful. Yeah. To that anonymous person. Okay, Rob, closed session report.
Yes, good evening. Council met in a special closed session at 3 p.m. this afternoon dealing with labor negotiations and discussed the salary and benefits paid to all representative and unrepresentative groups. No action was taken by the council. It requires reporting under the Brown Act.
All right. And that takes us to public comment. Please come forward, make your comments 3 minutes or less, and on subjects that are not our public hearing item.
Good evening, Mayor, Council, staff, and community members at home. My name is Keith Taylor. I'm a resident of Morro Bay, and I'm a friend of the Morro Bay Fire Department. I'm here to thank you, the council, for giving the chief the authorization to hire a full-time firefighter paramedic. And for it only took us 40 years to get to 10, so hopefully it won't take another 40 years to get to 11. But I want to thank you for that because we have simultaneous calls, so now we'll have 2 on each vehicle. So the people like myself on the north end, and Rick's also on the north end, we have a chance that something terrible happens to us, okay? And it also helps with the 2 in, 2 out. So that's another really great thing. And I just want to say again, thank you from the community. All of us appreciate what you've done. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Mayor, City Council, resident of Morro Bay, Gary Johnson is my name. And also, you know, I've been talking about our photo expo that we're going to be having here in October 23rd, 24th, and 25th, and I have it up here on the wall. It's really going to be a great event. I wanted to, the main thing tonight is that this is our first annual, and we thought our registration would start June 15th. But we got the whole package together sooner than I thought. So we're going to start our registration as of last week, and we're already getting a lot of people signed up now. We're only going to take 300 applicants. If there's something for everybody, it's going to be amateurs, midway amateurs, and professionals. And the neat part is that we have George Lepp and Cannon's going to sponsor the whole thing on Sunday here in this Vets Hall. We're going to have about 6-7 hours of George Lepp and Cannon. And if you know about George Lepp's Institute, they charge $200 to $300, $400 just for one day, sometimes up to even higher than that. And it's not too sharp, but we're going to have workshops. You're going to learn how to, if you want to learn how to take sunrise pictures, sunset pictures, we're going to have beginning digital photography and really some neat things. Also, if you want to become to Yahoo Group, Morro Bay Photo Expo, we have a lot of photographers in this area, and it's really something to lock in on that. Now, how this all got started, Phil May, who's a resident of Morro Bay, he said, you know, you got a lot of photographers around here. Why don't you have an expo? So he called me and, well, Mike Baird and Kevin Cole and Jerry Kuhart and many other photographers, and it took him to get us together to do this, and we hope it's going to be successful. The Chamber of Commerce is behind us, and we're just really ecstatic about this because this is one of the best places. I've traveled around the world, and I still think that this is one of the best spots for birding and for taking pictures. And
what's
I got the yellow light. Pardon
what's
me?
What's the website?
Pardon me?
What's the website?
Oh, the website is Morro Photo Expo. Oh, I got to show you something. I couldn't get it all in one sheet, but once you get on the computer and you're going to pay by PayPal, see it says click here to register. So you register, thank you.
And what's the registration fee?
Okay, the registration fee is $75 up to June 15th, and after that it's going to be $99. So just click on the registration. If you have a problem, call Phil May, 771-8055, and his phone number is on the PayPal list. So if you have a problem, he'll work it out for you. So we're excited. Join up now. Thank you.
And we've left posters in the planning department, and we would be happy to post some at your utility pay stations if you would like. You can contact Lana Adams at info@slowgreenville.org or 286-0072. And complete information is available at our website, www.slowgreenville.org. There's also an application online. The deadline for the applications is coming up quickly on June 15th. It's a win-win opportunity for everyone. Your constituents save on their utility bills. The city saves on limited resources. PG&E saves generating capacity, and we at Slow Green Build get to pursue our passion. So once again, I want to thank all of you and the City Council for your time and support.
Thank you.
Good evening, Council. I'm Dan Glessman of Morro Bay. And I'll call your attention to the overhead. Three knowledgeable parties have told Morro Bay that we're in difficult financial position. A year ago, our consultant management partners said that we're unable to continue with status quo operations. In January, Susan Slayton wrote, in order to maintain Morro Bay as an incorporated city, increase revenues or decrease expenditure. And in May, Andrew Lee Luker wrote that existing revenue streams are not supporting the costs. Without new revenue, we'll be forced to make program cuts. I take these comments seriously, and as our elected leaders, you should too. At the local, state, national, global levels, times are tough. Recovery is going to take some years. Historically, Morro Bay's economy has been fueled by three things: the power plant, fishing, and tourism. Going forward, we're primarily left with tourism. Unfortunately, Morro Bay's share is near the bottom of the tourist food chain. In tough times, that dollar is vulnerable. Growing the economy will take time. Short term, the only variable that council can control is expenditure. Reviewing the preliminary budget, I was disturbed to find that 10% of the projected general fund revenue comes from $388,000 of an internal loan and $500,000 from the power plant outfall lease that may only last a couple more years. So, I watched the budget workshop with great interest. After hours of discussion, the general fund reduction amounted to $20,000. That's 0.2%. and 17,000 of it came from yourselves, Council. Other local governments are facing reality and beginning to control the big dollars. Yes, that's wages and benefits. And yes, some programs must change. Calls for increased taxation did not fare well in last week's state election. Beyond a TOT increase, Morro Bay voters are unlikely to tax themselves more. They gave you Measure Q. They're struggling with the sewer charges. If Morro Bay is worth saving, act now. Get the structural deficit under control. Or as my dad liked to say, folks, don't ride the pony until it drops. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Michael Durek. I'd like to discuss item A4 on your consent agenda and request that you pull that item and that you turn down the budget that's been brought to you by staff. That would be under Resolution 25-09 for the 09-10 fiscal year. The proposed budget is not balanced and depends on borrowing to make ends meet. To approve a deficit spending document at this time is on your part a violation of the public trust that the voters of Morro Bay have placed in you. So you need to tell staff, go back to the drawing boards and redo that budget. Now, if you would, allow me just to cite one small item in the budget and highlight it a little bit. Budget calls for funding the visitor center at $160,515 for the year. This money is given to the Chamber of Commerce, as I understand it, in addition to another $18,050, which is handed to the Chamber for their website. So we're at about $179,000 total. The idea behind this is to fund the promotion of tourism. And that, I might add, is in addition to the $113,500 that you're spending on the Promotions Committee, which has the same function. This weekend, I had some guests, and on Sunday, they were in need of some information on local attractions, so we went down to the Visitor Center. I thought that we're servicing those visitors for $160,000. Now, if you want to hand the Chamber $179,000, the Visitor Center and the website, that's fine. But please, don't insult us by disguising it as an investment in something that gives us a tangible return on tourism, because it's really not. So once again, please pull this agenda item, disapprove this budget, and direct staff to bring you back a budget that is internally balanced without any borrowing. Thank you very much.
Good evening, Mayor Peters and council members. My name is Linda Merrill, and I live in Morro Bay. I'd like to enlist your help. I don't know exactly who can help me, but this weekend I witnessed some harassment of the sea otters near Target Rock. I made some phone calls, but I would like to ask that we add to respect our wildlife to the Discover Your Better Nature in our campaigns for selling Morro Bay to our tourists and to other people. I think that our wildlife, the sea otter at the moment, there are three adults with three babies, and they're hanging out among the kelp and trying to protect themselves as best they can. And I saw a kayaker that went very close to them, and also a huge pleasure boat that actually ended up circling them when they were out a little bit further in the bay. So I think it's a decided problem that people, I think it's just stupid that they would do such a thing, but people are apparently unaware, or we do need to do a little work on that maybe to let people know that there is a problem. Also, I would like to say once more that with D2 new business, that I'm concerned about where the funds are going, and I would like to ask that those funds be used to help the North Morro Bay Fire Department to be improved, that when the property is sold, I think that that property was intended to help the North Morro Bay people get better service, and I'd like to ask that you revisit that and allot that, the sale of that property, to help us get better coverage out in North Morro Bay. Also, A3, I appreciate and support your policy changes, and please adopt Ordinance 548. And also, I support the Chablis lease. I think it's A2, and I do support that lease, and I think that this is a wonderful addition to our bay, and I would like to ask you to support them. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Hank Roth, Morro Bay. I just want to let the folks, the parents and guardians of children at home, know that the Morro Bay Child Safety Seat Program will be hosting a Child Safety Seat event at Spencer's Market Parking Lot on Wednesday, June 17th from 10 to 2 p.m. About 80% of child seats have anywhere from minor to major installation problems, so there'll be child seat technicians from around the county helping me put on this event. The Morro Bay Child Safety Seat Program is wholly supported by donations and gifts. This program will be held in conjunction with the Morro Bay Police Department and Morro Bay Neighborhood Watch. And I'll be back next month to with a flyer to talk about this again, but I wanted to get the word out there. Wednesday, June 17th, from 10 a.m. till 2 p.m., Spencer's Market parking lot will have a child safety seat check event. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to council. Anybody have any responses to anything that was brought up? Okay.
I'd like to respond to the chamber thing. I think it's in our contract with them that we have a clause about hours, and maybe we can just ask staff to investigate that and see if it's being honored.
Okay, let's go to the consent agenda since we're ahead of time. How often does that happen? Anyone want to pull anything?
I would like to pull A2 and A4.
Notice how I looked at you, Betty. Okay.
A2 we're in, and A4. We're in communion.
Okay.
So with that in mind, if you look back at the terms, under number one, I would like to eliminate the last sentence. That there would be no, first of all, I don't believe we should have a holdover. This is certainly an exception, and I think we're probably pretty strong about that. I don't want it going month to month. They've got 6 months to get their ducks in order, so I don't want it to continue.
Okay,
so,
now which one are you talking about? I'm sorry.
Number two. And eliminating the last sentence, which says any holdover of this license will be a month to month, and I'm saying there won't be a month to month. Number four. I would, again, eliminate the last two sentences. C does not desire to have any holdover. That's true. And that then it talks about the amount going up if there is a holdover, which is a good cushion that was put in here in case there was a holdover. But I think that we're pretty strong that we don't want any holdover and that this kind of program needs to be operated somewhere else than in a city facility, that we're willing to help them out and carry them through the season, but that they have those 6 months to do their homework.
Another place. Okay, yeah. So those two changes.
Those would be my two changes.
Okay. Rest of the council, how do you feel? Any objections to those?
I'd like to maybe talk about, is that going to hurt this person that's going to be trying to rent this?
What, the holdover part or
either one?
The docking. I mean, I guess I would be concerned with requiring the $500, but the holdover, I think, is they're going to be looking for another place.
It certainly hurts the city without having that holdover clause in there.
Okay.
Why?
If, in fact, after 6 months, and I think we've been clear to the applicant, and you can be clear to them that 6 months and they have to find another place, but if they don't and we have to evict them, you're only going to get your $200. But if you have that $1,500 clause in there and we have to evict them, you'll be able to obtain that higher amount. So it's a penalty. It's a high penalty. It's there to make them move as opposed to being able to stay there and continue to try to pay the $200 or the $500.
So you say... Pardon me. Are you saying then if we have to evict, then they would be there longer, so while we go through the court hearing, they would pay the $1,500?
The court would find the damages only to be $200 or the $500.
I see. So that's... Okay. Got that. Thank you.
Okay. So does that change your suggestion then?
Surely it would. So would that mean, Mr. Schultz, that both the removals in 2 and 4 need to stay in, or just the 4?
Just the 4. I mean, the 2, it by law, it's going to revert to month anyways. But, I mean, I think it's more that you be clear to the applicant that they do have to find other accommodations within that six-month period. And we've been clear with that with the $1,500 penalty.
Okay. Then I would withdraw my changes based on that reasoning, but I would seek counsel's permission that we require them to pay the $500 rather than the $200, that they have to berth at public facilities.
Can we require that? Isn't that a private enterprise?
You couldn't require them, but you could, regardless of whether they berth or not, charge the $500. And then I think it would then, from a economic standpoint, wouldn't make any sense for them to try to dock elsewhere. Maybe Rick has a suggestion on that.
Yeah. Rick? That was a pretty good comment, actually. I thought I'm not sure how we could exactly require them to berth at city facilities, but this is, of course, an agreement that we drafted, and if we could discuss a change with them and see if that might be acceptable. I would note that the party, the owners of the vessels, are in the audience, and if you wanted to ask them, I'm sure they could come up to the podium and say that, discuss how that might affect their business.
Carla?
Mr. Algert, when you originally brought this to us, it was with the understanding when we approved this that they were going to be berthed at a city dock, and this has since changed?
Right. That was our understanding originally. Now they've located berthing for the vessel down at 201 Main Street, and that seems to be a better location for the berthing from our standpoint. Doesn't impact city facilities, and we'll be able to rent them out on a daily basis as the fishermen leave, and they'll be using other city facilities just for boarding and unloading and loading passengers.
Okay. Does anyone wish to hear from the owners of the Shipley?
Yeah.
Ladies? Just state your names.
I'm Annie Clapp.
I'm Zoe Andrus.
Okay. And if we required you to berth and dock at the same place, would that be a hardship at this point? Or
Would it be the same dock that we'd be loading at, or are you talking requiring us to berth at a commercial fishing spot as in the original?
Right. Madam Mayor and Council, originally analyzed, we would berth them in one of our slips at Tidelands Park and probably choose to board the passengers at a public dock such as Tidelands Park, side tide dock, not at the commercial fishing slips.
Okay. Yeah. It seems to me we should leave this the way it is and leave them the options, because it seems to me it's going to work against us, too, if we tie up in one of our docks all the time. So any other questions for them?
Is this going to stay at your discretion, Mr. Albert?
Yeah, the way we wrote the agreement, then it would be up to us to determine if it was the $200 just loading and unloading at passengers at the city facilities or the $500 a month berthing. And it would be dependent. My understanding of our direction here was we want to try to help this business survive for the next 6 months while they find another location. So we would try to accommodate whatever they needed to do within reasonable and safe procedures.
I have one other question. Is the first priority then on those areas at the pier for commercial fishing still? They take precedent if the commercial boats are trying to come in from out of the area?
Right. All of our – so you mentioned the piers. I don't think the pier would be a difficult place even for them to berth, but it is a potential site, and that's open anyway. So the loading and unloading would have to happen at one of the public floating docks, and then – we're talking about allowing them to berth overnight if that's the choice at probably the slips down at Thailand's Parks, either side of the boat launch ramp that are reserved for commercial fishing vessels, and we do give priority to them. We would have to, you know, those are permanently assigned to commercial fishermen, and it would only be when those those slips became available because those fishing operations were out of town.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Motion?
Move to approve A2.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, Betty, A4.
A4 is the resolution to adopt the fiscal year budget for 2009-2010. And my preference, and I guess I'll speak to it, is that I'll vote no on this. Again, I feel that there needs to still be more tweaking done to it before it's finalized, and I prefer that we wait until June to approve it.
I'll be joining you with that vote.
Okay. Any other discussion? All right.
I'm just going to let you know I'm going to be joining them also this time. I'd like to see it amended before it comes back to us. I'm going to just ask that.
Okay.
This is awkward.
Yes, sorry.
Move to approve A4.
Second. Discussion. I think, you know, we've got a balanced budget. I understand what people are saying, that we're borrowing from ourselves, but we do have the money to be able to do that. We don't have any debt service. And we do have a finance director who is being very conservative and very careful. And we can make changes as we go along. So I'll be voting in favor of the budget as it was. Well, any other discussion?
That makes two of us.
Yes, I think staff has an idea of where we're interested in them coming back to and addressing some of our concerns about the money. So hopefully that can be changed.
And how are they going to have that?
No, I don't believe council has that direction, but yeah. Why don't you vote on it, and then we'll decide what our next steps are, and I would say an emergency workshop on the budget.
So we're talking another workshop. Okay. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Okay. 3-2 with Peters and Grantham in favor and losing. So now what?
Well, if we're going to come back, we'll need to pick a date for a workshop when we can meet and bring back our ideas based on the direction that you provide us tonight.
Okay. Would you like that as a future agenda item rather than discussed now, or would you like it discussed now?
That may actually be the best plan.
Rick, I'm sorry, Rob. Do we need to? I mean, we haven't got any direction to give right now. We haven't discussed this. It's not on the agenda.
Well, it is on the agenda. Your budget was, so you certainly have the ability to give direction now. It was a consent item with other items on your agenda, so it's up to you whether you want to discuss it now, at the end of your agenda after public hearings, or schedule a special meeting to discuss the budget.
Okay, then why don't we continue A4 until after our public hearing? And we will give staff some direction to come back with at that budget hearing. All right. With that, we're breaking right at 7 o'clock. We'll take a five-minute break, and we'll get to our public hearings.
Recall we had two planners that left us towards the end of last year, and we're using contract planners until the last few months. And so I picked it up at a staff meeting and said I believe I could get the research together and put together our current GP and LCP policy so we could deal with this issue that's been plaguing the Planning Commission for a little bit of time. The reasons for the agenda item is there has been some confusion among staff and residents in this area regarding the allowable uses in this area. Statements that I got out of just recent public hearings that have been made by the public have said this area is not zoned for commercial use. This part of Morro Bay is special planning area B, which is restricted to recreational boating and fishing. And a third statement that was taken out of a public hearing was our general plan specifically refers to this area and says harbor uses shall be for recreational boating and fishing and not for commercial fishing. This agenda item is not about any plan to try to change or create new zoning or policies. We're not going to also, we're not going to review a specific project in this area. All we're doing is reviewing our current general plan, local coastal plan policies. It's to hopefully to clarify those current policies. It is the role of the City Council to interpret the meaning and intent of our LCP and GP and zoning ordinances. It is the role of staff to implement that and administer our LCP, GP, and zoning ordinance. Staff is seeking the City Council's interpretation of sections of our LCP, GP, in order to provide guidance when applicants for uses are requested in this area. Here's the area we are talking about. It's, like I said, it's the area. Here's Main Street right here. Here's Acacia here. And Barlow's not shown, but it's one street. I guess that would be south of Shasta. The area above here is zoned R1 PD. And this area right below it is zoned WF PD. And then this is our Bay Area, which is zoned Harbor. No, wrong button. I got it. Wrong button. So those terms, for those that don't know, R1 is single-family residential district. The PD is a term used for planned development, and the purpose of the PD overlay zone is to provide for detailed and substantial analysis of development of parcels. And the WF, which is the waterfront, the purpose of the waterfront district is to provide for the continued mixture of visitor-serving commercial and recreation, harbor-dependent land uses, and appropriate waterfront areas. Here's a map from our LCP, from our coastal use plan, and it's kind of tough to read, but there's a couple areas here we're going to talk about. Area 9, which is this whole bay area right in through here. And then we'll talk a little bit about Area 7, which is kind of a weird kind of area, but I believe it touches on it. It's called the Central District, but it touches right down in here, which is where that area is considered. The city's coastal land use plan, chapter 1, page 16, states, and then I go into that area I was talking about, which is area 9, and it provides for the planning area that incorporates this area within the city limits covered by bay, water, wetlands, and tidelands, and it has existing uses, B, potential development, and C, major coastal issues. I don't know if you want me to read all of those. They're up there on the board. I will point out there is some controversy with B, the potential development, that says it is anticipated that existing uses will be expanded. It is possible that the harbor could be utilized for some coastal-dependent energy uses in the future. Received quite a few emails on that issue. I didn't write this section. This isn't proposed new section of the LCP. It's been there since I believe 1983 is when the LCP was written, or before that even. And didn't want to leave it out because it is an important part of our Area 9. I would say, though, with regards to that issue and the energy uses, we did pass a measure in 1986 that requires the vote of the people for any type of energy-related facilities that are new in the Bay Area. So I bring that up only because there was quite a bit of concern that something was being added to our general plan and LCP, and that's just not true. But it does relate to our harbor and navigational ways. The reason I was pointing this out is dealing with the commercial use versus recreational uses, and it does say the harbor is being utilized for a variety of harbor-dependent uses, which include dockage, moorage, government, commercial, and recreation navigation. So it talks about quite a few of the issues there, and it being used for all different types, consistent with traffic, circulation, parking constraints in the Embarcadero. And again, that's been in our LCP since the beginning. In 1983, the Planning Commission received several letters, and this was during my research of the issue and help from staff, requested that the LUP and the LCP be designated for this mixed-use area be changed to strictly residential district. Hearings were held before the Harbor Commission on January 12, 1984, and before the Planning Commission on April 6th. So based on those letters and quite a few citizens, this area, entire area, was trying to be changed to residential and doing away with the waterfront designation. The Planning Commission and Harbor Commission discussions highlighted several important points bearing on the issue, and I think these are important to discuss as we go through this because quite a few of them talked about that area, and since this was 1983, it's important that you look at this area again and see has it changed at all, because they do talk about whether there's going to be a change in the future in this area, because at that time it was a real mixed use, and I provided you of a map back then that showed some of the uses that were there then that aren't there now. But they did make findings and pointed to key points, being that the long characterized by a mixture of residence and water-orientated commercial, and that no doubt both kinds of uses have long histories in this area. Policy or point number two that they pointed out was, given the well-established character of the area, significant recycling from one kind of use to another is not likely in the near future, 5 to 10 years. Well, one of the questions you have to, has there been a complete recycling in this area to make it now only to residential? There is an existing evidence of potential conflicts. They talked about them back then that we hear and any time anything's proposed in this area about the substantial and potential conflicts between the commercial and residential uses. And again, they talk about the recycling is highly unlikely. They certainly talk about the road access and circulation in the area is poor, and that if you look at the minutes which were provided to you back in 1983, they talked about that and the traffic and the accidents that were occurring then. Again, as we know, they talked about the terrain puts restrictions on possible development in that area, and a couple other ones there. There is a limited amount of waterfront available, and there is a need being served by the existing water-orientated commercial establishments in this part of the city. So out of that, the Planning Commission made recommendations to the City Council, and that was to designate the area below the bluff from the fuel dock property north as mixed-use harbor. And so they were not going, even based on the testimony of people at those hearings, we're not going to change it into completely residential. They designated the southmost part, two parcels, an existing residence above the bluff from low-medium-density residential. And they made other considerations there that are on there and also in my staff report regarding vehicle access and parking lots serving commercial properties below the bluff may be permitted above the bluff. So it certainly did talk about the ability for commercial uses in this area still being relevant. Out of that, and in response, the City Council took it up, and that's probably the most important that I'll go over more in detail so you understand exactly what the results were of these 1983 and 1984 hearings was, is that they passed Resolution 9584 and Ordinance 262, and those resolution ordinance approved changes to our land use policies and zonings and as follows. The LUP for the properties above the bluff, They changed that from mixed uses harbor to low medium density residential. For the zoning of the properties, they changed the above the bluff to WFPD to R1PD. So going back to the map that we now look at when we look at this, previously this entire area above here was also waterfront, and I believe we had a market, we had some other other commercials. I think another boat haul out was even there at one time. So through those changes, that's what changed it to the R1. But below the bluff, and they kept the WFPD below the bluff. And they also added the following policies to your LB text. And these are very important policies because they actually were policies that were very specific to this area. of the city west of Main Street between Acacia and Barlow, which is the area we're concentrating on. And what they said is that all existing residents and commercial establishment traffic impacts on the nearby uses, that any new residential development shall be of a density and design which minimize potential exposure to and would not unreasonably restrict water-oriented commercial activities, that any new use shall not generate significant traffic circulation impacts and shall include adequate parking, loading, and access, and then finally, no new use shall not result in any harmful discharge into the bay. So based on these policies for the past 25 years, staff's been interpreting, as far as I've been able to recall, that that uses in that waterfront area and in the harbor area can be of a commercial use. They do have to go through heightened scrutiny. They do have to comply with these requirements there. But that if someone, an applicant came in and proposed a commercial use in that area, that it was allowable under our zoning and our LCP. But to confuse the issue a little bit further, I need to look at a few other policies with you that are not in that same section but are elsewhere. The city's local coastal plan, Chapter 9, page 148, states that recently the city has taken steps to ensure the priority of commercial fishing within the Morro Bay Harbor while still providing for recreational boating. With a demand greater, the city-owned slips could provide, it was necessary to establish priority for commercial fishing craft use of these slips and for the slips waiting list. Vessels of a commercial nature refer to boats which have a current Department of Fish and Game commercial fishing license and whose owner or operator holds a commercial fishing license within the calendar year, has actively used for commercial fishing activities. In order to be consistent with the Coastal Act policy, it is necessary that private slip development within the harbor also give priority to commercial fishing, balancing with the needs of recreational boating. And with that comes some programs and policies, and one of them in our general plan is future harbor expansion specifically for commercial fishing should occur in the northern portion of the bay. This area is better suited to accommodate the larger boats, which are becoming more prevalent in the fishing industry. If this future harbor expansion reduces demand for existing commercial fishing facilities, those areas south of Tidelands Park should be utilized by recreational boats. And we also have Policy 701, which states that new commercial fishing facilities shall be located in the northern portion of the bay, north of Beach Street, and new recreational boating facilities shall be located south of Beach Street. Commercial fishing shall be accommodated as long as facilities and space allow, and a few other, I won't read the whole thing there, but the big point on that was, is they seem to be, it is stating that commercial fishing facilities shall be located in the northern portion of the bay and new recreational boating south. It does give the exact same definition as I said before. When you're dealing with vessels of a commercial nature, you're actually talking about commercial fishing vessels as opposed to a commercial vessel in general. Policy 709 says the city shall designate recreational boating and fishing uses as priority uses for the portion of the planning area west of Main Street and south of Acacia intersection. Existing coastal dependent uses shall be protected when approving new development. So that policy is dealing exactly with the same language, but it seems a little bit in conflict with designating this area for recreational boating and fishing when the other one says it can be used for other commercial uses. And going back to some of the previous statements that have been made by public, we've heard many times from the public state that this area is not zoned for commercial use at all. I have found nothing from that change from 1983 to 1984 that says this area is not zoned for commercial use. It is zoned for commercial use. Our policies allow commercial use. Question is what type of commercial use, or whether you do want to change it now because we see that change in this area. This part of Morro Bay is a special planning area B, which is restricted for recreational boating and fishing, although there are policies that that state recreation and boating and fishing. There are all other ones that say that it's also commercial use. So there's a conflict in those two.
And then the other testimony was our general plan, specifically refers to this area and says harbor uses shall be for recreational boating and fishing and not for commercial fishing. And so with that, I'll turn it over to you for any questions. That's our policies. We're not asking for any zone changes and all at all this now. I think our main objective is that staff needs direction when an applicant comes in and asks if a commercial use is available in this area, whether he should be told no or whether he should be told yes. If he's told yes, he still has to refer to all these policies that allow would alleviate some of the confusion. But I think that confusion really isn't there if you actually read the definition of what a vessel of commercial nature is. And then the Planning Commission took it up. It was a new planner handled the matter.
Before you do that, didn't they also have a change to 701, the Harbor Board? I'm on page 4 of the minutes for the Harbor Advisory Board. They wanted to add a sentence to the end of LCP 701.
And what was that sentence?
Marine-related commercial facilities projects shall be reviewed by the Harbor Advisory Board for recommendation to the City Council, and such projects shall be in compliance with the existing general plan and local coastal plans. That was their other recommendation.
Yeah, it's a recommendation that you certainly could. I would say you want to take that up as a separate issue. It wouldn't really go in your LCP. It would go more into your ordinances or bylaws and what their jurisdiction was or wasn't. So I think I probably left it off because I didn't think it was an issue germane to commercial use or non-commercial use.
Okay.
And then Planning Commission took it up at a public hearing. The planner handled it was a new planner, was unfamiliar with the issues. Planning Commission wanted more information about these policies and how they were interpreted. They also didn't feel comfortable handling policy decisions and felt that that's something that council should do. But you certainly have the option to send that back to them if you want a definitive answer as to whether this issue should remain commercial uses and what type of commercial uses are allowed under our policies.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. This is a public hearing. I rather expect some of you out there to comment on this. So if you would, we would appreciate it if you could line up over there. Then we have some constant movement. Mr. Phillips?
Good evening, Mayor and members of the council and staff. My name is Jim Phillips. I'm a resident of Morro Bay, and I'm also a member of the Harbor Advisory Board, and I don't envy you the task ahead trying to bring clarity to these two policies, but I would want to suggest that you keep the commercial nature of the waterfront in mind as you try to sort out the policies. There, of course, is a long history of commercial dependent activities in the harbor and on the waterfront, and I think most would agree that over the years, for one reason or the other, they've declined. In the very area in question, for instance, the boatyard is working at about half capacity. The fuel dock is shut down. The marine electronics store that was there is gone. And as that kind of evolution takes place, where commercial and water-oriented activities are replaced by non-commercial or residential areas, then we lose that space in the waterfront forever. I know, as a recreational boater here for many years, the first place I had my boat hauled to have it worked on and repaired is now a restaurant, and that restaurant serves the tourists that walk up and down the Embarcadero. But it'll never be, in my opinion at least, another water-oriented commercial activity. And I think once that's lost, then we'll have trouble forever regaining it. So I suggest, as was the staff recommendation to us at the Harbor Advisory Board, that you interpret this in such a way that it permits commercial use down there, not necessarily commercial fishing use, but rather commercial boating use and water-related activities, and deal with each proposal for commercial use in those areas on a project-by-project or case-by-case basis based upon environmental analysis and that sort of thing. That would be my recommendation to you, and I thank you for taking this issue on.
Thank you.
My name is Phil Hill, Morro Bay resident and a member of the Live Aboard Association here in town. I live on a boat in that area, and I've heard some scuttle about what's going to come and what isn't and how horrible it's going to be and all that. We have the only remaining facilities for hauling a boat out. Not a big one, but up 40 foot, and I'll tell you that. As long as they're not hurting the grassy islands and hurting me and my neighbors, I think it's a great idea. You know, I think it's a really good thing to do. And there was one other point, and I probably won't get to it before it beeps. You guys have a lot of work to do. Again, keep the boatyard, clean up that nasty dock next to me. It's a hazard. And if you got to put some tugs in there, fine. You know, I don't have a problem with it. I see a yellow light. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil.
Good evening, Council. My name is Ed Ewing, a local resident fisherman. I've been here for 40 years, and there's always been commercial uses down there that I can remember, except for the last 4 or 5 years. That property where Warble League's fish processing plant was bought by an individual who wasn't interested in fish processing and wasn't interested in doing much with anything down there. Got in an argument with the city. The city's been arguing back and forth, been in court. We're going to go to court. So that's probably why anybody looking at that property to do anything has been delayed. It has nothing to do with business. Commercial entities are always looking for a place. Dockage is rare. When last Planning Commission meeting, somebody made the statement, oh, there's lots of room down at the other end. Well, there isn't. I had a hell of a hard time finding a place to tie up the other day. There was a few too many boats that didn't belong there that were there. And I wouldn't really tell about it, but that's okay. Anyway, there are several city policies that come into effect here. One is on the South Deep here. And that city policy, I don't know if they've changed it, but it used to read that the South Deep Pier was for commercial fishing and government and city-owned boats. That was it. Nobody else. Got a big argument about that South Deep Pier a while back. State Attorney General ended up calling the city and telling them to move some towboats. So there is not the facilities that everybody thinks there is for every, you know, it's... It's crowded down some places now. Other times it won't be because the guys will all be out fishing. But regardless, we need the commercial space. It's needed. And the policies that kind of conflict they were talking about, I don't know how they got some of them passed the Coastal Commission. Usually local coastal policies and your local coastal plan has to be approved by the Coastal Commission. And... there's some statements in the Coastal Commission that says that waterfront uses have priority for both fishing, commercial and recreational, too. But it says that if you're a commercial fishing or a commercial area is taken away, they should be provided for somewhere else. There's a lot of statements in there that haven't been read today. And I think you ought to try to keep it commercial if you can, because it's... the residents above there have been bellyaching about anything that happens down there for years, and everybody seems to get through it. So that's my comments. Thank you.
Madam Mayor, Council members, Bill Newman, a local resident. It's obvious that we need interpretation. That's what is before the council. But... what commercial means could mean a lot of things. Might be good, might not be good, but this is rather an odd way to go about it. I think we probably should have a new policy or a revised policy written such as the ones that have been presented rather than just a reinterpretation. Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and members of the City Council. My name's Jane Heath. I happen to be a resident of Morro Bay, but I'm wearing a different hat tonight. I'm here as an attorney, and I represent Bernadette Pekarek and Bill Martini, so I wanted to be clear that that's why I'm here tonight, though you've seen me before in other contexts. The point, others know a lot more about the history and the intricacy of the interaction between the policies and the plans that are before the council. But a couple of things jump out. One is that you're being asked to clarify an admittedly ambiguous provision of overlapping land use and planning documents, general plan, zoning, coastal plan, city policy, etc. But what I'm not hearing is I'm not hearing any recommendations for how to clarify that, even as a process. It seems to me that there are definitional foundations that are missing here. There are several references in staff's presentation to water-oriented commercial, but there's no definitions, and then consider how you're going to clarify that policy. Thank you very much.
Madam Mayor and Council Members, my name is Bernadette Pekarek. I am the owner of the Upland property, which this discussion is all about. The number one issue here is the water lease site area out in front of our property at 235 Main and bringing in industrial tug operation in front of our property so as to try and force us to sell and leave. This will not happen. There is really no other zoning issue south of Tidelands Park other than out in front of our property. The proposed industrial offshore tug operation requires industrial zoning such as around the power plant. The local coastal plan, Chapter 7, designates this area of the bay for energy offshore support. Should the federal government mandate it for Morro Bay? This is Coastal Policy 5.14, page 117 of the LCP. The local coastal plan is very clear on the south of Tidelands Park being zoned for recreational boating and recreational fishing only under new uses. When we purchased our property in the year of 2000, we knew what the zoning was in this area, and we knew what it was allowed. Our main intent for these lease sites was mariculture, which is stated as the number one use in the harbor zone. Because of the city's pending lawsuit against us for the removal of the wharf, this has interfered with our plans. We still would like to pursue this option out front, as it is compatible with the neighborhood and we feel would be a great asset to Morro Bay. Neighborhood compatibility is the number one issue in this area, and offshore energy supply operation, be it oil or other energy, is not allowed at this end of the bay and is absolutely not compatible with the surrounding neighborhood. There is currently no business for an industrial offshore tug operation in Morro Bay or along the Central Coast. The main purpose of this industrial tug operation is to service offshore oil use. Another point on zoning for Harbor Advisory Member Brett Cunningham to state at the April Harbor Advisory meeting that there has to be a dump in someone's backyard, referring to locating industrial use in this area. This is exactly why there is zoning. So that does not happen in predominantly residential neighborhood. And that is why coastal policy confirms recreational boating for this area. We believe staff has it all wrong to twist and to try to force this use in residential part of the bay. We ask that you support the local coastal plan and our conclusion on this. Thank you very much.
As far as putting one of these on, photo, just lay it on.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, just throw that on. Yeah, that one too. I agree.
Yeah, it's good. Hi, I'm Bill Martin, and good evening, Mayor Peters and City Council members. Actually, you know, I have a prepared speech, and I'll try and read through it, but I just wanted to make one quick comment as far as the zoning and the commercial zoning in Area B. No one has actually questioned that there is waterfront zoning there. The issue has always been what kind of waterfront uses are allowed in the actual water lease site. Because when the use of the industrial tug operation coming down to a residential neighborhood or measure area B, it strictly the uses in the bay, and not we're not disputing that it is water-oriented commercial use on the land side. It's just strictly that in the coastal zone, it states in policy after policy that south of Tidelands Park, for any new use, we're not talking existing use, but any new use is for priority recreational and fishing only. Existing in Morro Bay, in fact, there's a plan for it to come to Morro Bay if the federal government overrides the state government, then it states that the facility will also be shared with commercial fishing. They have to restore the sand dunes. So it's not that it may not come here. In the actual coastal policy, it states that if federal government overrides a state, that this will be here as far as an offshore oil or energy support facility. But the point being, the southern part of the bay, there's policy after policy that speaks of recreational boating only. And the purpose was that everything is supposed to be concentrated north for the commercial fishing industry and for commercial, and that is why the working embarcadero had the tug operation on the embarcadero, because that's where it was originally supposed to be located and still can be located there. So the point being is this is what will be coming south of Tidelands Park if you allow commercial and don't define the type of boat that's coming south, and this is absolutely not allowed under the zoning plan. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Mayor, council members, my name is Alan Hochstetler. I own the property just south of the fuel dock. Just a little history here. My family ran a mooring launch service from the 40s, the 50s, and into the 60s. And that small boat there, this one, right there, is actually one of the launches that was used during that time. It was sold in the 60s to the Sylvester family. At that time, the Sylvesters were required to move north of the boat ramp, because vessels of that type and that size were totally inappropriate for use in that area. Now what you're looking at is what's next to it there going back. So anyway, just a little history. I also spent a great deal of time at the wharf down at the cannery property in the 60s, 70s, and early 80s, and never was there ever a permanently moored boat there, a commercial boat. It was used commercially, but it was just for offloading of early on the abalones, and then later on the oysters and some commercial fishing, but it was never used as a permanent mooring or commercial dock. The fuel dock where the Chablis is at now, I think the Chablis is a great idea for the Bay, especially in the absence of Tiger's Folly. If it needs to be there for 6 months, I wouldn't oppose that at all. I just would hope that you would never allow the actual boarding and commercial use of it there, because there just is no parking, and there's just, anyway, you'll look at that when the time comes. But thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Bob Tapt, resident of Morro Bay, and first off, I'd like to point out that Mr. Schultz has it backwards. The policy, as the last gentleman mentioned, the interpretation of the policy in this area has always been that recreational uses are allowed and commercial uses are not. I've had a house there for almost 30 years. There has not been a single new commercial use come in during that period of time. You've heard a lot of verbiage, but just keep in mind what the land use plan says. Mixed harbor uses shall be for recreational boating and fishing rather than for commercial fishing. It's very clear. No interpretation is required of that statement. And that statement is in the new general plan as well. That attitude has not changed. That's in the plan that's at the at the Coastal Commission right now. But I would like to bring up another point that has not been discussed. I'd like to draw your attention to Land Use Policy 68-10, Paragraph 1, which says, new development shall not encroach within any defined wetland or estuarine area as mapped by U.S. Fish and Wildlife, nor shall it encroach within the protective buffer zones of these areas. This is the United States Fish and Wildlife Service map of wetland areas for Morro Bay. This is the top, it's a little hard to see because it's light, but Acacia Street runs about two-thirds of the way to the top, and Barlow is down towards the bottom there. And I've made copies of these for you. The entire area that we are discussing, the coastline along there, is designated as wetland area. No development at all.
I'm the president of the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization. I just found out about this today. I've been out of town for most of a month, so I fell behind. It seems to me that commercial use is referenced in the past, and I believe it was clear, and all we have to do is look at the history of Morro Bay to see what we had in Morro Bay and what their thoughts on it probably were at that time when we did have tugboats and so forth here in the city. The tugboat being referenced here is this big offshore tug. It's pretty scary. It's a big giant thing blocking up Morro Bay. Well, it's at the T-Pier right now, one of them. There's two in question here. And a local gentleman owns these tugboats. He's purchased them, currently has totally refurbished his newest one. Again, it's at the South T-Pier. If anybody wants to go down, I urge you to go down and take a look at it. He spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in this town refurbishing this boat. He's done a magnificent job. I know him personally of stellar character, as was his father before him. So you can look at this, but it was said today, and it really kills me, that this thing is involved in oil, the oil industry only. I believe the words were. That's not true. He's been involved in many, many tug operations, many for the United States government. Primarily, in the last 12 months, his work was with the United States government. Currently, one of his boats is employed, I guess you'd call it oil industry. He's taking the place of the Clean Seas vessel that is under construction. So he is protecting us from oil spills. Now, I guess that's working for the oil company, but whatever. In any case, there has been large vessels moored in that area. They were not moored for extensive periods of time, but swordfish vessels use that, research vessels use that, vessels every bit as big as this current vessel. And they were tied up there for various periods, not extended. That was when Orville League owned and operated the facility. But in any case, I urge you to consider jobs in this economic era. The jobs that he offers on these boats are good jobs. These are not low-paying. They're high-paying, well-paying, good jobs. And he brings a lot of money into this town, spends a lot of money in the town. And what are we looking for here? We don't want to turn down every economic opportunity we have. Thank you very much.
Good evening. I hope you'll bear with me. I lost my reading glasses, so I'm kind of faking it with these tonight, and everything is either blurry or it's clear one way or the other. Honorable Mayor and City Council members, good evening. My name is Kim Kolb. I live at 263 Main Street. My family's been at that location for well over 50 years. The makeup of our harbor, waterfront, and business section is shifting. It's a course that has been slowly moving forward for many years, from the small fishing village atmosphere to a predominantly tourist-oriented business structure. The small, quaint, owner-run gift shops have been replaced with larger, less personal shops stocked with items from every corner of the world. The neighborhoods and waterfront in Morro Bay have always had a charming, small-town appeal that attracts tourists and retirees from around the U.S., Asia, and Europe. Growing up in Morro Bay was one of the most enjoyable times in my life, and the thought of its transformation into another Santa Barbara is unsettling. Morro Bay has its own uniqueness, and we shouldn't sell it down the river in the name of progress. In years past, the Myers Marina on South Main Street serviced the occasional small fishing boat, a few abalone boats, and a variety of recreational boats from surrounding marinas and moorings. It was never meant to operate on a large scale, and it served as a vacation destination for the two families who owned the property. As the years rolled by, the vacation homes turned into permanent homes for the two brothers and their families. The League family owned and operated the fish processing plant and leased the small market on Main Street to another local family in our neighborhood. The existing pier was only used for loading and offloading purposes and rarely used as a docking facility. The noise from the offloading fish facility created noise issues in the neighborhood that required EPA intervention, and the tractor-trailer trucks created a bottleneck on Main Street, noise and pollution problems, and safety concerns within the neighborhood. The cannery has long since closed its ventures to spoil the tranquility of our neighborhood. Thank you for your time.
Mayor and Council, Michael Durick again, thank you for your time. I'm not going to express my own opinion on this issue, but I would like to read into the record a letter that was written and submitted, as I understand it, to you earlier by someone who usually appears at these meetings and has a great deal more history in Morro Bay than I do, and that's Dorothy Cutter. Since I didn't hear the letter read by the council, I would like to read it and have everybody else hear what Dorothy had to say. Dorothy had a pre-planned trip out of the country and was unable to be here tonight. You are being asked to change the interpretation of what is allowed in the area west of Main Street between Acacia and Barlow because the staff has determined to bring an industrial tugboat operation there. I would like to give you a complete history of the zoning of this area and how it came about. Before 1964, Morro Bay was part of the county. Old pictures that I have show only residences in this part of town and one commercial building. The zoning under the county was residential. In the early 1950s, Agnes League bought the cannery property and requested the county change the zoning to industrial so she could build an oyster plant. In 1964, when we became a city, the city changed the zoning right away because the industrial was very inappropriate in the middle of a residential zone. They changed the zoning to R2. Please also note that the city right away on Main Street from Acacia Street to the State Park is only 50 feet wide, the width of a residential street. In 1974, a marina project was proposed in front of the cannery. At that time, we had a very viable fishing industry and local support for this project. It was appealed to the Coastal Commission by the National Sierra Club. The Coastal Commission denied the project, and I quote, "The Commission hereby denies a permit on grounds the proposed development would have a substantial adverse environmental effect and would be inconsistent with the findings, declarations, and objectives of the California Coastal Zone Conservation Act of 1972. They allowed a floating dock and a temporary tie-up of boats and gave the city 18 months to come up with a coastal plan. The floating dock and the boats had to be moved to the north part of the bay because the commission felt the large commercial project should be in the north part of the bay. The Department of Interior sent someone from Washington to check up on the impact of the estuary, and their findings were sent to the Coastal Commission and were part of why the project was denied, along with testimony from Fish and Game, Sierra Club, and numerous marine biologists. The city spent thousands of dollars on consultants and lots of staff time to come up with a local coastal plan and general plan that would accommodate the fishing industry, the boating public, and the estuary. Measure D is for commercial fishing north of Beach Street. Commercial boats are allowed north of Tidelands Park. Recreational boats are to be south of Tidelands Park. These are still in effect in our current GP/LCP. In 1984, after much discussion with the surrounding residents, it was agreed to change the zoning to a waterfront PD below the bluff and R1 PD above the bluff. The reason for the R1 was the residential 50-foot street, and almost all of the structures in the area were residential except the cannery and a small building for the boat repair. As the city attorney noted, I get one more paragraph. As the city attorney noted, part of the conditions for any commercial uses below the bluff were minimal noise, glare, odor, and traffic impacts on nearby uses. This would describe an industrial tug operation. So now you're being asked to change all of this. What is the meaning of the line at the bottom of page 2 and at the top of page 3 on the staff report? Are the tugboats being lined up to provide offloading of LNG and oil? LNG offloading was killed recently in Ventura and Santa Barbara counties because they considered the pollution risk too great, and we think oil companies are working their way up the coast. Okay, please read this out loud and put it in the record. Signed, Dorothy Cutter. Right, and I do feel like I should have a very large purse to put on the podium when I read this letter, but I don't.
Thank you. Okay, that concludes our public comment. Anyone else? All right, we'll bring it back to council. All right.
Would you like me to try to frame some of the issues for you based on the public comment? If we get my presentation back on, that would be...
I did want to make one comment right away, and that was a comment that was made about that the city's trying to force some people to sell and leave their home. That is absolutely not the case. We are not trying to do that. We're just trying to interpret what should go there. We're not trying to move anybody out of town. So, Rob, yes.
I'm going to start from the back because I think that's a good place to start of my staff report. And also, I think we've got some common ground there that I think most of it would agree on, and those policies, 52.1 and policy 701 and 705, which deal with commercial fishing and recreational fishing, and that commercial fishing definitely was supposed to be in the north and recreational fishing in the south. It does not talk about just commercial uses in general. There was that language that it says vessels of a commercial nature, but if you do read on, they weren't talking about but commercial uses would be allowed. Our feeling is it would be on a case-by-case basis and would have to meet that environmental review. There are definitely arguments regarding the project that still has to come forward, that whether it is neighborhood compatibility, whether it meets the visual challenges, whether it meets the light standards, all of those things are quite a challenge for that project. But it's still a commercial use. It doesn't follow under the category of commercial fishing. And that's one of your questions is that commercial use viable, or should it be only recreational boats, and disagree with staff's analysis? It's important we resolve this issue because, like I said, we are wasting applicants' time, not only the one that's in the process, but you heard the one that came up to the podium that would like to make it a mariculture if no commercial uses are allowed. There's no reason for them to pay the fee, go through the whole process to find out that commercial uses are not allowed in this area, only recreational boating activities are allowed. It makes it a lot easier from a staff standpoint instead of doing the complete analysis on light, on visual, on mitigation measures, only to find out that commercial uses aren't allowed in the area. And so that's what we're at here. And there's no other motive for that other than to make staff's life a little bit easier. So I hope that frames it a little bit. I think we're pretty clear on the commercial fishing versus recreational fishing. But are there other allowable commercial uses? Certainly from a historical standpoint, they were. Certainly from my interpretation, they still are allowed but have to go under a heightened scrutiny. But that's up to you to decide that and give us further direction.
So
a couple question. Other points I will point out is I've tried to do some comparison with our new LCP that's up there, waiting forever at Coastal Commission, and we have gutted out tremendous of the code section regarding to energy that you heard all that talk about state versus federal and energy dependent. That was written at a time when our power plant was full force and energy related stuff is quite prevalent in there. Quite a bit of that has been completely gutted out of our new LCP. The comment regarding the mixed-use B and is in there, and all of this stuff on Acacia and Barlow about all the different requirements for that are still in there also in our new LCP, so it did make the transition.
So if the fuel dock was to be reopened, that would still be allowed because it's an existing or was an existing use?
No, it's lapsed. It's completely lapsed. So if you make the determination only recreational boating facilities are allowed in this area, that would not be allowed to come back.
Okay. Because it seems to me that that's one of the things that we have to look at, and it was pointed out by one of our speakers, is we got to define things here. If you're talking about commercial fishing, are you talking about the support for commercial fishing as well? For instance, fuel docks or marine supplies, things like that, that would be logical to support the fishing industry or not? Or are we just going to go with recreational? Are we going to have sailboats only and nothing else? I think we need to figure out what our definition is of acceptable uses and then define where those should be. And I got to tell you, I just want to read something here. This is from 1984, August of 1984. '84. In summary, the long history of conflicts between uses illustrates the basic difficulty in planning for the future of this part of the city. The policies outlined above by the Planning Commission are an attempt to, 1, preserve the waterfront for reasonable, water-oriented commercial uses, 2, to protect existing uses, 3, to minimize further conflicts between commercial and residential uses, and 4, to limit future circulation problems. It's the exact same thing we're faced with tonight. Nothing has changed. We've got the same issues, I think, that we have to deal with, and the same important things to be careful of, to not ruin the uses that are needed there and still make sure that we don't harm the people who are living there. So, with that, who wants to start discussion here?
Rick? Question for Rob. So, Rob, you'd agree with me that we have conflicting regulations here.
Confusing. I don't know if I would call them conflicting. In that many of the policies that were cited that I ended up at the very end of that talk about commercial fishing and recreational fishing and where they're supposed to be located make no mention whatsoever of commercial use. And that's where a lot of the confusion, you get people that stand up and say, only recreational boating is allowed in this area. And it says that's where recreational boating facilities should be located in that area south, but it doesn't state anything about other commercial uses. And when you go and look at the history of 1984, you look at this specific code sections dealing with that area from Acacia to Barlow,
that every reduction in commercial activity in the harbor makes it harder and harder for us to argue that there is commercial benefit to dredging the harbor. In recent years, we've moved more and more to the safety question. Some things have changed in that neighborhood. There has been a continued reduction since 1984 or 86, whichever date you want to pick, of commercial activity. The market is closed. The fuel dock is closed. The boatyard is reduced in half at least. And, of course, the fishing dock and the processing plant. So every time we lose a waterfront commercial or marine commercial use, it makes it harder to argue the national economic benefit of maintaining the harbor.
Thanks. And I want to say that I get it. Bill's been nice enough to invite me down to his property, and it's beautiful and as cool as I think tugboats are or other vessels associated with fishing. I probably wouldn't want it in front of my place either, and I get that. It's kind of akin to someone parking in your driveway or out in front of your house all the time. It's an irritant, and I certainly could understand that part of it. The future employment that one of our speakers spoke about, I think, is a strong argument. This is a tough one. Rob showed a slide, the one previous to what the council thing muddies the water or something or confuses it, and there was on page 3, number 2 or B, I forget which how you have it, but it was environmentally related. And when I saw that and read it, it seemed to me that, it sure would exclude a heck of a lot of commercial use. I guess I'm sorry we don't have, not from you, but maybe from our boards or commissions, a more consistent recommended policy or recommendation from them on it. And then I'll listen to what the others have to say.
Okay. Betty?
A question first for Mr. Schultz. Do you have LUP definition of industrial versus commercial? Is that in our document? I apologize for not looking it up before I came. But I'm just wondering where this kind of, if we have a definition.
I know in our zoning, commercial and industrial is. I'm not sure if it's in the LCP. I've got my LCP with me. I can look that up.
Okay, thanks. Just responding to Mr. Grantham's comments and comments in the audience, I think that certainly we want to encourage business in this community. My concern would be location, you know, that's in the proper area that happened. And so I would not want necessarily to see the tugboats go away, but I do not know that they would be appropriate in this area. And I think compatibility here is one of our top issues. When I consider this, I'm not thinking of just this particular wharf, whether it stays or goes, but also the area in front of the inn at Morro Bay. Would we want this kind of, you know, industrial or commercial, any type of boating or facility in front of them as well? So I think we have to consider what's there now. And I certainly appreciate those who have come tonight to tell us the history of this area, that it was residential, some commercial was allowed, it was incompatible. They ended up with this big meeting back in 1983 and 84, and both the Planning Commission and the City Council at that time, 4-1 in one body and 5-0 in the other, said we've got to maintain a balance here, and so we'll keep the residential above, it's conforming, we'll keep the waterfront below, it's conforming, but they saw the transition happening, and that has happened over the last 25 years, and it's been alluded to, or not alluded, but even stated by Mr. Algert, that this is an area that's weaving away from this area that was, you know, allowed for the commercial, but has slowly gone away. And so I think that what's happened now is it's come back. Are we going to allow the transition to continue in its natural fashion, which is to allow it to – I think there's only maybe the one business that's left, and that's the boat haul out since the fuel dock went away. So I think it's been an evolutionary process, and I'm comfortable letting that evolution happen and keeping the appropriate kind of facilities there that would be appropriate. And certainly the guidance that was given to us from the council back and then that you referred to regarding that it has to meet the certain pollution, light, and air things, and then the environmental one that they specifically added, the Planning Commission added, that any new use shall not result in any harmful discharge into the bay. And certainly the map that Mr. Teff brought tonight, I feel, almost gives us no choice. You know, if that's what's been decided by the government, then that is part of that area, and it becomes moot.
No?
Thank you. I actually appreciate the comments so far. I'm pretty much in agreement with those, and I feel like some of the documents that have been laid out already are fairly clear. A quick question. I'm curious to know, with the oyster farm, how does that interplay with this area, and technically what that was, if at all, temporarily utilized in that area. But again, I think that the designation of that in the northern part of the bay is a good one that works with the parties. And a question I would have, again, is do you see any opportunity for that to fit in, that specific operation to fit in with our current availability of mooring and landings? Is there room in the northern area for that at this point, or is this discussion happening because there's absolutely nothing available for them besides this temporary landing at the South T Pier?
We're talking about the tug yeah. operation now, yeah. When they added this new boat, the owner of Maritime Logistics approached us and said he needs a place to tie up and his two boats. And so when he was thinking about adding this boat, and he was looking all over the bay, and there is a shortage of tie-up spots. As you can see right now, he's at the South T Pier. It isn't necessarily the cost. It's the problems of doing an, you know, making it work at the South T Pier with boats coming and going all the time. So he, on that particular project, he identified the pier as a good spot, and he was willing to propose repairs to it so it could be utilized for his tie-up again. And so there is a shortage of tie-up for that type of boat.
But at this point, how long do you see the South T Pier working, and do you anticipate other options opening up in that more compatible area for this sort of use that would give us the opportunity to potentially house that sort of an operation in a way that works with the community?
I think maybe I understand your question better. Unfortunately, I don't foresee new berthing opportunities north of Beach Street coming up other than the T-Piers.
And so, you see that T-Pier is only a temporary option then?
Well, it's first come, first serve, and so that's where he has to tie up right now. And historically, of course, in my time at least, Sylvester's Tug operated out of Mid-Embarcadero about 500 block, and that business and that berthing was sold to another business, and it's now being used by recreational vessels.
Okay, because something else that's come up, obviously, is the potential ocean energy development of offshore energy that's renewable and interesting to the community. And I see the tug operation being an important part of that to help us be active with that sort of research, I guess, at this point. That said, I don't think this area that we're talking about is appropriate, even with that wish, the area that we're talking about south of Tidelands, and I would not want to do something that kept mariculture as an option. I think components of commercial use in that area and obviously recreational use are appropriate. I think the designation here in the local coastal plan about what we would use as our way to decide compatibility are good. These different options here, 1 through 3, with the designations, that's pretty clear to me. And my question would be, who decides that compatibility? As we've gone through this process, it seems like this has bounced around between the Planning Commission, the Harbor Commission, and now it's here to us, and everyone seems to be a little unclear as to who is truly the first place for this decision to go. Are we looking at this being the process for these sort of questions in the future? Can we put this into a place that's more clear and understood tonight and avoid this sort of shuffling that's been going on with this question?
Well, as to a specific project, I mean, that goes through the land use process, and an applicant comes forward with a project, and it goes through the Planning Commission, then could be appealed to the City Council and could go to Coastal Commission. We're trying to avert that not only with that project, but with other ones that could come down the pike. But I think it even gets a little bit more confusing, or maybe it clears it up with the definition of commercial, if you want to hear that.
Go for it.
On page 21 of our LCP, we've got three definitions of commercial land uses, neighborhood commercial, district commercial, and service commercial. I think that I could read all three to you, but I think that service commercial best fits this situation. And it states, many commercial uses may be located carefully with respect to residential neighborhoods. These commercial businesses that create noise, require outdoor work areas, or have other characteristics which are not suitable to be located near residential land uses should be located in areas designated for service commercial uses. This land use category is intended to accommodate some form of light industrial manufacturing uses, particularly related to commercial fishing needs. Specifically, it is intended to encourage the continuation of boat building, land uses, and fish processing, which does not require canning or extensive cooking facilities. So that's what it says for service commercial, which seems to, you know, say that
some ideas and concepts. So I felt like they were open to that, and I'd be willing to send it to them for that sort of a, input if we felt like that was necessary.
Okay, Carla.
I would have liked for that before it came to us. I don't know now about sending it back at this point. I think a lot has been answered and addressed. I guess I'm reading here, you know, the proposed commercial use by nature design, you know, the minimal noise, glare, odor, and I'm recognizing that this is from the Harbor Department, and you know, this is in our plan, and that proposed commercial use, you know, on a case by case basis. So this has been to the Harbor Department, Harbor Advisory, excuse me, and to the Planning Commission, both. New commercial facilities are allowable on a project-by-project basis. That's what they voted on. I remember when they were offloading down there a lot. So I know that it has been permitted because I spent a lot of time down on those docks. And I certainly want to be able to find a place for Mr. Loving to have an opportunity to have these tugs here so that we do have a chance to look at future energy options, as you were expressing, Noah. I think it would be a good thing and provide some opportunity for jobs in the area. So I disagree with some of the comments that were made about this being here for oil reasons and, you know, those comments. I think that he follows the work that's available to them. They don't follow him, so I think a lot of those comments were very misstated. And right now, I'm just going to wait and hear what Janice has to say.
Okay, well, I'm reading a bunch of things. Page 6 of 7 and page 7 of 7 is where I'm going to be looking at. The city's coastal land use plan states, and I'm going to jump around between paragraphs here, it's necessary that private slip development within the harbor give priority to commercial fishing balanced with the needs of recreational boating. And then program LU 52.1 says if this future harbor expansion reduces the demand for existing commercial fishing facilities, those areas south of Tidelands Park should be utilized by recreational boats. And then LCP policy 701 says commercial fishing shall be accommodated as long as facilities and space allow, consistent with providing for other coastal dependent uses. It seems to me that what's happening is not so much that we've expanded our space for commercial fishing. We're exceeding it. We have only so much space, and it's being filled. And so we're looking for other places. And it seems to me that rather than say, okay, it can only be recreational boating to the south, we're looking at we have to provide for the commercial fishing wherever it is. Now, is tugboat commercial fishing? We're not talking about the tugboat project tonight, unfortunately, or fortunately. What we're doing is trying to get a determination of what is appropriate in that area. And I think that what Carla just said is a good point, and it's what the Harbor Advisory Board said, too. It's going to be judged on a project-by-project basis. That's already there, and all of those provisions are already there. So the tugboat project or any other project is going to have to meet those provisions in order to get the approval of the Harbor Advisory Board, the Planning Commission, and us, ultimately. So I think, I know that Rob isn't going to appreciate this, but I think that it actually is good the way it is. I think it does state that it's a case-by-case basis. We have all of these requirements that a project would have to make, but I don't want to shut the door on the possibility that, gosh, wouldn't it be wonderful if our fishing industry picks up again and we need more space for our fishing boats. And they have to go down there because it's the only docking available. So I kind of think it's okay the way it is.
Ms. Peters, where else is there docking? I mean, there's slips down there, and they're used by smaller boats, but where else would you put docking for fishing boats?
Actually, I think the Aquina actually tied up there at one point. So there is space. I just don't want to close the door.
But are you saying that...
Close the door to the possibility.
So let's take the Inn at Morro Bay for an example. There's a wharf that was there. It's not been kept up. It needs to be, what's left of it, probably torn down. Would you entertain putting in fishing slips down there?
Yes.
Okay. So anywhere along there, and actually there's probably only two places left, that and the current other wharf, and that's it. So what you're saying is that you're willing for those projects to come forward and go through the haggle, I would call it, or the struggle of making it through the process when... In essence, I feel we know that those projects would not be approved. And
well,
so why would...
Get an answer on that from Rob.
No, I don't think one has to do with the other. I'm not sure what Mr. Test's map was or whether that is a proper map, but I would say you still have to pass your policy, and that would be on a case-by-case basis. If there's a law under federal law that doesn't allow a commercial project or any project to go forward, then it would be based on that. But I'm not aware of what he's talking about.
And here's the thought. Even with, let's say, okay, if we were talking about the tug project, the big ones, maybe we could say, no, those aren't appropriate in what is right now essentially a residential area. Maybe just the little ones can go there. But to shut the door and say this is going to be strictly residential and recreational boating when we might have a need for more commercial space, I'm not comfortable doing that.
Yeah. If I could ask you, you talked about the conversations you had with some people in planning, and so through those conversations, do you feel that's got merit, and why do you feel that we should maybe go that way?
Well, one thought I had was it seemed like in the public comment that we were receiving via email, for the most part, there was concern that there wasn't enough time for public hearing and input with this. And I'm not sure that's the case still. It seems like we've gone through three rounds now. But that was still put out there, and I felt like that would help resolve that issue. The Planning Commission, I think, they were very dissatisfied with the information that they had. And I would say it basically was not an opportunity for them to comment at all, really, because of what they had to work with. And again, they expressed the willingness to hear this. It wasn't like the feedback I got was not that they were telling us, this is not our area of expertise, you should deal with this. It was more like, we're willing to deal with it if we have the proper information to make a decision and recommendation. So... I feel like this could be hashed out more. Obviously, there's some interest in some flexibility with the use in this area. I personally think it'd be good to be able to be a little more clear about the definitions of what is appropriate and to start to draw that out a little more, building off of what you've pointed out here with the different components of the local coastal plan. And the restrictions there, but to get a little more feedback about the definitions, and it seems like the Planning Commission would be a good place for that, and that would help alleviate Ms. Winholt's concerns that we are kind of leaving it out there for a lot of headache and effort down the road with different proposals. If we could help define it a little bit more, that would probably strengthen the components and restrictions in here and get us closer to something that's more clear to applicants in the neighborhood and the communities.
Okay, question for staff. Is all of this that we have heard tonight, was that available to the Planning Commission, or is this new information?
They received the same report that was provided to the Harbor Department. They didn't get the hands-on presentation. I don't know if Rob did.
They received the same type of report from Harbor. Rick Algert was there, which has a more knowledge, but they did not receive a lot of these policies. A lot of these policies occurred afterwards.
So now that we have all this information, it wouldn't be a lot of staff time involved if we sent this back to them to review in more detail.
Yes, but I would probably say, why don't we give them a little bit of direction? So, I mean, right. Is it fact what you're trying to do is define what commercial uses are allowed there? Are you trying to, I mean, are you just opening it up to anything that they want to come back again with you after the same presentation?
Well, I would hope that
I go back to the comments, in hearing the comments from the public, a couple people said that they don't deny that some commercial uses are allowed in that area, which is completely different than was stated last year at the public comment, which was these comments there that say this area is not zoned for commercial use. This part of Morro Bay is a specific planning area, which is restricted to recreational boating and fishing. And our general plan specifically refers to this area and says harbor uses shall be for recreational boating and fishing and not for commercial fishing. So, I mean, maybe some direction is just to these items that yes, commercial uses are allowed, but you need, what, more definition, more what are the allowable uses, or do you want to leave it completely open and have them come back with what their opinion is?
Well, no, I agree.
Now,
I think we should give them some direction if we're going to send this back to them. But I think it is a good idea. It gives everybody another chance to come back and maybe suggest some wording, suggest some of the terms that we could use, given that we don't want to close the door to commercial uses down there, but what is appropriate to go in with a mixed-use area, which it was when everybody moved in. So let's remember that.
Barely, as you heard the comment.
Brought back to the Planning Commission with a full historical review and report of the zoning issues for the area, for the zoning of the full historical review and report of the zoning issues for commercial uses in the Bay/Tidelands area of the city, west of Main Street, between Acacia and Barlow. This is the last component of the original motion. And that they provide the council with recommendations and further definition of appropriate commercial uses for that zone. Anyone have a suggestion?
Bruce, what's the potential scheduling?
Could
we have a second on it, and then we?
Second.
Okay.
I would say we could probably get there within the next two months.
Just for clarification, if when you say the full historical uses, it would be the same presentation, because I've spent quite a bit of time, and these are the, you know, finding the Planning Commission meetings, had to go to storage. I never did find, although I found memos from the harbor saying what went on, I never found any minutes. We think that's because it was not even the harbor department, it was a harbor district maybe in that time. So, I mean, I've done the research, so it's going to be basically the exact same presentation as tonight, but that is different than they received the first time. And with that caveat, we can get it to them maybe in their next two meetings and get back to you, so it wouldn't take long.
And Mr. Smekler is the mover. I would hope that would include, or maybe this naturally happens, Mr. Ambo, that you would include the minutes from this meeting, so the public's testimony tonight would be before them.
Yes.
And then I would also like the comment about the map. I still would like some kind of ruling on that map as part of their presentation.
Okay.
Okay. Any more discussion?
Is that good for you, Ms. Bauer? All right.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
I did, but that's okay. For the record, I wanted it stated that there was other commercial use down there. There's a fuel dock that was there, so it was not just the cannery, but also a fuel dock.
Okay. Betty, did you
attached
say yes?
To your staff report was the one with the two boat repairs, the fish plant, the market, the fuel dock, and the marine electronics shop that was mentioned were the uses that were down there historically.
Betty, did you say yes? Did you vote yes on that? Okay, so it was 5-0. And I would suggest that those of you out there, please, you've heard what we've discussed. If you've got ideas on appropriate wording that you want to suggest to the Planning Commission, please do so. I mean, there's got to be a common ground that we can come to on this that would be acceptable. So let's work on that, okay? Thank you very much. Yes, want a break? Okay, quick break. Okay, we're back. And we'll go to item C1. There's a resolution approving the Green Building Incentives Program. And this is Bruce and Christine. Who's handling it?
I'll give the presentation briefly, right. But Christine and Dan Doris are here if we need any additional assistance. But just in terms of background, you referred this to us on April 13th to develop an incentive program for green building. It's actually a rebate of building fees that were paid upon further certification of projects that meet green building standards. And what we have is attached to your, and we've developed program guidelines with the resolution that's being presented for your consideration tonight. And just to summarize, the program involves LEED certification for new projects, for new residential and multifamily projects and commercial projects. And just as a note, that requires, you know, earlier consultation. So new projects that they can do that don't go to the fullest extent but conserve on energy and incorporate energy-conserving measures, green roofs, water, solar water heaters, efficiency standards, and so forth. So we're also suggesting that we come back in 6 months with a kind of a status report on the program. If you want to keep that intact without the update, please let us know. But we could come back with in 6 months to let you know how it's doing, and with recommendations to strengthen the program or eliminate it, depending upon what we experience with the program. If you have any questions, Christine Rogers is here, and so is Dan Doris. Be happy to answer them.
You're talking about 6 months. Is that going to be enough time to really know? Because one of the first things you said caught in my mind, and that was that people are going to have to check in with you way ahead of their project rather than when they've already got a design. So is 6 months reasonable, or and how do we get the word out to people to do this work, to come in earlier and get this information before they go through their building plans?
The application, so we would know in 6 months how many people had actually applied, okay, and what types of projects and what rating they were going for. And as far as publicizing it, you know, we do have the USGBC locally, Slow Green Build. We have our city website. We have, you know, the AGP channel. So, you know, getting the news out there is easily accomplished.
Okay. So in 6 months, you'd be able to tell us the applications that have come in for it. Even then, is that enough time to really judge? And I'll ask the rest of the council if you feel that it is or not.
Well, I don't think it would. You wouldn't stop the process, so it would.
Right.
And I think that it's just going to be a question of how many people information, yeah. Okay. I have a question, though. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
But, Madam Mayor, if I can add, similar to other things, when we've come back where we haven't had enough things come in,
okay,
we've said, well, we haven't had enough. I think we dealt with waterfront fees, and in that period of time, we didn't have anything come in, and we were going to study projects that did so that we had something to work from.
Okay. Yeah,
Connor, go ahead. On the optional sustainability incentives, it says that you can apply for the additional incentives, but in lieu of base certification. But I didn't. Unless I missed it, I don't know what the base certification.
That
is.
Means you either if you apply for the rebate under the basic program, which is LEED Greenpoint rated, then you can only do those. You can't like double dip and get the optional and the base program. So you do one or the other.
So the idea of those would be if you missed the timeline and didn't apply in the beginning, you would apply for these, because I don't see where you would apply for a $2,500 rebate. Oh, okay, because you'd only get $2,000 there. Got it. Never mind.
Okay, other questions?
I have a question. It's under that same. It's on page 3 under the discretionary findings. Can you explain that to me and when that would be used?
There we go. You know, similar to the recent project where we actually made findings of public benefit because of sustainability measures being incorporated into the project, but the city has no way to ensure that those things end up in the project. By the time you get through the planning process, the value engineering, you know, at the end of the day, did they actually incorporate those sustainability measures? So this thinking was just to bring that to your attention, and so the option would be to enlist a condition that would make them then responsible for incorporating the documentation and inspection requirements of the program guidelines, which basically says that, you know, your building plans have to show those things incorporated into the project. You know, the inspections then would verify that they were actually incorporated into the project.
But why would we make that discretionary, not mandatory?
Well, I can add a little bit to this. Well, if you want to make the program mandatory, you can, but it'll...
I mean, I thought it meant that if you say you're going to do it and then you don't do it. But it seems to me if you say you're going to do it, then you should do it.
Well, that's we've had projects before you that have mm-hmm. said they're going to do it. We know they were unable to do it mm-hmm. because they hadn't started the process. And that's what we're concerned about. A lot of people are going to say we're doing these green projects, mm-hmm. but at the end of the day, when they, as Christine indicated, when they start value engineering these projects, and when they can't get these materials on the schedule, then one of the first things that are probably likely to go are some of these building components. Mm-hmm. So, but I think what's important is the distinction we're making here is when it's a material project where you feel it's an important component where you gave it the more of a public benefit because it was a green project, for example, and you used it to justify some kind of a density bonus or something like or building height or something like that, then we would want to make
Greywater. I didn't think of it, to be honest. We could include that component if you choose to. A Greywater project for a residential house would probably looking at the value of the job of about $5,000, a building permit and plan check would be about $125. So we could add a component that, you know, gave a percentage or anything there or up to 100%, whatever the council directs us to do. We could add that into the guidelines if you choose.
To be consistent with what, as far as a ratio with these other measures, do you have a recommendation that you think is appropriate?
Oh, probably like 20% or something. I mean, they do take quite a bit of work mm-hmm. explaining the process to people yeah. and working with them. But
especially at this point.
You're right.
Okay. I'd like to include that. Do you think a rainwater collection system would also be appropriate, or is that kind of getting a little less engineered?
A rainwater collection
I'm thinking maybe, a larger scale project that
maybe on a larger scale project, yeah, we could. But that probably, well, the larger scale projects are probably going to do some kind of green point or LEED certification.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be already in the project if they're doing LEED certification.
Okay.
It may be one of the components for the LEED program.
Okay, that was it for me. I'd like to include that in our final motion.
About the Greywater?
Yeah.
At 20%? Okay.
I have one more question. Uh-huh. Could you speak to, on page 2, under the commercial, the increase in rebates from 25 to 40%? That 40% just seems really large to me. Is this typical? Did we make this up? Does this come from somewhere?
Actually, that's about half of what some of the larger counties who really are the only people that have these type of incentive programs, it's about half of that. And the other that do not base their programs on percentages but instead have a flat fee that they reimburse, we're at about half of that as well, since we are a smaller entity.
So this is actually less than we would normally see?
Yes, about 50% less.
Even though it's a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Noah, you had something else.
Yeah, my other question was just to ask for a little further definition of the expedited plan review. I noticed that was mentioned in here, but wasn't something I was particularly aware of. Would you describe that a bit for someone that's pursuing this process and what the benefit is there?
Well, the expedited plan check and permit process is for, just to clarify this, because some people get confused, is for building only. Not the planning process. The planning process has legal time frames that people have to meet, and so the planning department has difficulty expediting that end of it because they have certain time frames that they have to meet by law. But building side of it, we can take a green project, and because it is a green project, put it in front of somebody else and review it first and try to do it as quickly as possible. Depends on whether it's a small residential project or a large commercial project. But we are already trying to do our best with anything green that comes in to expedite it as quickly as we possibly can.
Great.
Okay. Anything else? All right, Noah, why don't you make the motion with your addition?
Okay, I move that the City Council adopt Resolution 2409 approving the Green Building Incentive Program with the inclusion of a 20% fee rebate for gray water systems within the optional sustainability incentive program.
And I'll second that if you have it come back in 6 or 9 or 12 months for review.
I think it's coming back in 6 months.
It's coming back anyways?
Yeah, 6 months.
Yeah.
Unless you tell us you don't want it to.
Okay.
Okay, any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Incidentally, I just want to thank staff for putting the motions into our staff reports now. That's really helpful. Thank you.
I did have a follow-up. I was very impressed with this that you've put together. I'm really excited about it. I hope you will follow up again with another PR announcement.
Christine and Dan did all of work on this, so they're the ones that did the good job.
Good job.
Okay, now we have our new business, and we also have to go back to A4. I think we've got a lot of staff waiting on A4, so would you like to go there next? Okay.
Can we just approve? Can we do D2 real quick?
Do what?
D2 real quick?
Yeah, if nobody has anybody have any concerns with D2? D2 is approval of the residential listing agreement with Morro Bay Realty for exclusive authorization and right to sell the city-owned property at the section of Coral and San Jacinto.
There was the one comment from the public comment person about the proceeds from this, and they would be related to fire-related purposes because that's what the mitigation was.
Right. I'm going to say this right, and please correct me, in a meet-and-confer situation with the non-three unions, and that meet-and-confer happened with the non-union groups to look for that $300,000 or more.
But not limited to?
Certainly not limited.
All right.
No, it's just some direction that we're
talking
supposedly
about
offering.
Yeah. Okay, any other suggestions? Noah, Carla?
That sounds good to me.
Okay, Carla, up to you. Oh, sure, yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to vote no on this just because I think we need to pass this budget. And knowing that we have the ability to come back and do this at any time. So I don't see why the two are here and there because we still have the ability to do that. So my goal would be to pass the budget, get it done, and go ahead and revisit this.
Well, and I'm going to add my feeling to that, too, that I feel that we've given direction to staff with the management partners report, which is our next thing here. And I think that there is certainly a lot more that can be done there before we have to make this kind of a cut. And I think it can be done before we hit our next budget cycle or even before we hit our mid-year. But we need to give them a chance to do things logically and with the full information of what will happen if they do make a decision, what the ramifications are going to be. And I think it's important to know that before the decision instead of find out after that it wasn't what we really wanted.
Well, I think that's part of the discovery that we're asking them to come back with is what are the implications of finding that
$300,000.
I'm talking about the implications of the management partners' recommendations, which we all agreed on our goals that we haven't really given staff a chance to develop. And we're kind of pulling the rug out from under them on that.
Well, and my belief for bringing it up was that I feel that we have an emergency situation financially and that the state will be coming after us and that we need to be prepared for that. And it's an immediate concern rather than a next fiscal year concern. And I'm sorry I interrupted.
That's okay. I don't believe that it hasn't been an opportunity because, as I stated earlier, in closed session, is that the last 2 years at mid-year, there's been personnel service increases that have been requested over $250,000 and $330,000 for 2 years. So, you know, we have to anticipate that there's going to be wage and benefit increases again this year. And we're already starting out with the $388,000 from the general fund, basically to balance it that we're borrowing. So.
Okay. Any more comments?
I'm assuming that you know this is of first concern, and maybe you want to hear that from council, that this is first concern because it is the budget, and that we would like it come back when you can, whether it's the first meeting in June or the second meeting in June.
We have to set a workshop date. We talked about a workshop, not a council meeting.
Well, I don't know where that idea of workshop came from. Does that mean
you want to handle this in a regular council meeting?
I don't know why not.
I think we're putting this in staff's hands right now, but we need to, as Ms. Slayton stated earlier too, we need to be able to move this in a timely manner so that we can meet our July requirements. And so I think they can bring back the information as Ms. Luker asked for direction.
All right, then I'll ask staff. How long before you feel you can come back with this information?
Well, obviously, we understand it's very important. We'll do our best to obviously contact the three groups and ask for a meet and confer. I'm assuming that we'll be bringing you back some options, and I would strongly suggest that you schedule a workshop to discuss this item because I think you're going to have a number of options available to you. I'm sure some that you'll like and some that you will like less. But I don't foresee. I think we're going to be constrained by two council dates in June. And we need to obviously present it to you by the last meeting. So I would suggest sometime in the middle, and we'll obviously do our best to meet and confer and get the information and present it to you. We've got some other options as well.
Did you pick an RDA workshop date? Would that be a possibility?
We did. It was the 17th.
How long do we expect for that one?
I have no idea. I don't know what's involved with that. But that brings up, I think what's throwing me off is the term workshop and special meeting.
Special meeting.
Yeah, I just didn't know what workshop meant. Like.
Special meeting.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I'm fine with doing it outside of a city council meeting.
The RDA is 4 p.m. on the 17th. I'd be concerned.
City manager.
Maybe. It'd be nice. If you need additional information, if we could come back to you. So if we push it to the 23rd, 24th, maybe we can shoot for the 8th. Well, boy, that's 2 weeks.
Could you do the 17th if we did the budget that time and did the RDA meeting another?
The RDA contractor has been, consultant has been contacted. What about before 4 p.m. on the 17th? What about it?
Well, we're trying not to do both of those in the same day. I think that's just too much.
If you all agree to a special meeting for a budget, why don't staff try to figure out exactly how much time it'll take us to prepare that information, then we can pull council on when the special, we know the direction, and once the motion does pass, between $300,000 and $600,000, and to meet and confer with those three non-union labor groups. When you say three non-labor union groups, it's really a little bit more than that because it's management is one, confidential is one, but then each executive and director is a separate negotiation. So it's a little bit more than just three groups. So, but let staff get together and then we can get back to you on exactly how soon we can provide that information and other ideas on the $300,000 to $600,000 that's going to get at least a majority vote on the budget.
All right, so staff will come back to us with a date suggestion. Any more comments? What, you want to say something?
I wanted to make a motion.
Okay. Make a motion. No, we held this. No, we postponed this until now. Yeah. Yeah, we continue with the later.
So let me try this and see what happens. I move that we approve A4 with the caveat that we hold, or I'm sorry, that we direct the city manager to initiate conversations and or negotiations with the non-union groups with the intention of cutting a minimum of $300,000 in the budget.
A second.
I'm sorry, Mr. We did vote on A4. Yeah, it failed. So is this a new motion? Okay, thank you.
Sorry. Okay, discussion on this motion. He's asking to approve the budget and go ahead with the trying to remove
the do what we want to do, but in the meantime,
approve the budget.
Budget. Yeah.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
We're not winning this one, Rick. It's just not happening.
Write all that down, Bridget. I was going to tell you beforehand. Maybe you shouldn't even bother, but.
Okay. Another motion.
I thought we were just giving direction.
I'll move that we give staff direction to find a special meeting time that we can re-meet on the budget, at which time they will present options to council of finding $300,000 to $600,000 within the non-union groups.
Non-labor?
Non-labor union groups.
And
any other, and anything other. Any other available resources?
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second.
Oh,
go ahead.
Second.
Okay, Noah's got the second. Discussion. You're talking $300,000 or $600,000. That's a big difference. What do you want?
The minimum would be $300,000 as preparation for what may be coming down. I think ideally we need the $600,000.
But what's your direction to staff? If they have to take $600,000 out of our budget, you are talking major cuts here.
Mm-hmm.
Do you really want that?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you want $300,000? They need to know that. They need to know one or the other. You can't ask them to do somewhere in between.
You want me to go with the higher figure?
I don't want you to go for any of them, but it's up to you. You got to give them something that they can work
with. The $388,000 would be a good start.
Okay.
All right, so the motion is for $380,000 in reductions.
$380,000,
right,
or $388,000?
Sorry, $388,000 in reductions. Is that correct?
Okay. I mean, I like the leeway. I was responding to the comment that Ms. Slayton made that some of that maybe will come back to us as it's prorated from fund to fund.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I was seeing the minimum is $300,000. But I can go with
$388,000.
It's your motion.
Okay.
Right.
Does the seconder have any concerns?
Well, it seems like it could be scaled, so we had some options. Obviously, when we talk about 600, that's a lot of cut.
Mm-hmm.
It's substantial, but it would be information that we could weigh and decide on during that budget hearing and look at the different scale of the magnitude.
Is that okay?
$388,000.
Okay. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. Okay, 3-2. Peters and Grantham opposed.
Okay, we're done with A4.
D1. This is a presentation on implementation on goals A and B from the Management Partners Goal Setting Workshop. And Andrea, here you go.
I'm happy to present this. I think at this point it might be a little bit backwards, but I'm happy to present what we have, and you can look at your timelines and tell me what you want to do. Again, since we're coming back next month, you may want to defer your decision on this. During the goal-setting workshop that we held in February, staff and City Council discussed a number of items that the City Council had indicated they were interested in under what success looks like for the goals that you set. Goals A and B, just to remind the Council, goal A was to develop and maintain a structurally sustainable budget, and goal B was to reduce overall administrative costs. You ask staff to come back with timelines and a schedule for completion of those tasks. And those timelines were based on parameters that you established, which included short-term, 1 to 3 months, medium-term, 3 to 9 months, long-term, 9 months plus, and ongoing, which were programs that were started and or continuing. In late staff, we provided a document entitled Goal Setting Workshop Outcomes for 2009, which is attached to your staff report, that outlined details to accomplish the What Success Looks Like section of the proposed document. The staff report is meant to further specify the priority in which the City Council would like to receive this information. At this point, I don't think I'm going to go through each item, but what we've done is we've taken out the particular items in the document and provided to you a timeline for those for their completion. I'm happy to we provided timelines as you ask. I'm certainly happy to amend those timelines. Probably an important piece of paper to look at is the very back sheet, which gives you an idea of how the timelines work together. And certainly, as you've heard, staff is concerned about the amount of work and the timeline in which those things will be completed. That concludes my staff report. I'm happy to answer questions.
Okay, questions for staff? Anybody? No questions. Okay, comments for staff? All right, it's up to us. We got to tell her what we want moved up and why and where and all of that. We got to give some definite direction here, because what Andrea has presented us with is her best estimate of how all of this can be done and done well and done intelligently. And if we're going to hurry it up, then we need to cut back someplace else. My only concern was in looking at the schedules, I think that we're having still problems, and I'm not blaming anybody on this. It's just a constant with that department, with public services. We're still getting comments from the public that, you know, things aren't moving fast enough. So I guess I'd like to see, and I know you're short-staffed. I totally understand that. I know you got a lot of mandated things to do for the state. But perhaps that might be the first place to look at perhaps bringing in contracted planners more often. So I would want to move that one up. It's now at January through March of 2010, and I guess I would want to move that up ahead of the Harbor Department, the city attorney. That would be my feeling. I don't know how the rest of the council feels.
My general feeling is that this would be on hold until after the city manager comes back with our budget information, because they are parallel. And some of what happens there may take care of some of this. It may not take care of it, but it may inform what comes later. And so to start on that path may adjust this in some way, or how she tackles it.
So you want to suspend this completely until after the budget discussion?
Suspend it completely.
If you wanted to not continue working on these things.
Right, right. I think the other is a priority for me. And I honor that time is limited, and so this is not be my on the front plate for me right now.
Okay, Rick, how do you feel?
I can see where it might make sense to wait, simply because some of these things might not be applicable anymore, and we give direction, and then we decide we're not going to do it for some reason. So I don't see a problem with that.
No.
I feel like some of these speak directly to what we're interested in as well, and may help Ms. Luker kind of identify what direction we as a council would like to see the focus going. And in my opinion, those include under B3, which is provide information to council about tiered benefits.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's essential to this conversation. That was under A. And then under B, what success looks like, pretty much all of number one, I think, should be components to this that should take a high priority. Really, the only one there in group one of goal B would be, in my opinion, number four, early retirements and the cost implications of those. That seems to speak to what we're talking about as well. Generally, I think that's where I'm sitting. I think some of these are important for that conversation we're going to have. And again, it would be four of goal B and three of goal A.
Okay, Carla, anything else?
Yeah, I'm willing to certainly let wait on this and give Ms. Luker the time she's going to need to address the budgetary issues. And I think that, as has been stated, some of these things will shake out in that, as far as early retirements, golden handshakes, furloughs. Some of those possibilities may come up when she provides the other information. So I just as soon maybe postpone this till after and allow her the time she'll need.
Okay. If that's the general consensus, then we just won't have any action on this. We'll just discuss it again after the budget hearing. Okay. Gosh, we finished. Yeah, Betty has it.
I have a future agenda item, if I might.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, gosh, I
forgot. Future agenda items. Betty.
Future agenda items. That one's taken care of. I'd like to agendize for our next regular meeting a notice that's come to us about AB 761 at the state level regarding mobile home vacancy decontrol. And I would be glad to provide some information on that along with the city attorney regarding that legislation that's in the at Sacramento right now that we may want to weigh in on.
Okay. I would agree with that. Anybody else? Okay, that's three.
Bruce Ambo and I went and saw a Wi-Fi installation in San Luis Obispo. And it has the ability to do internet, TV, PBX for phones, and all this stuff. And what's happening is cities are actually installing these systems, and they take over the functions of companies like Charter or things like this. So if we have agreement to at least, and there is stimulus funding available for this, especially for rural cities under 20,000. If you feel it's looking in, worth looking into, to give our IT guy maybe a trip to San Luis to take a look and listen for an hour or two, which they'd be happy to do for him, to see if this might be something that we could use as future revenue, then let's direct him to do that.
Okay. I'd go along with that. I think it's interesting to at least explore.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else?
I don't think it would take a lot of staff time to at least just tell us, is this feasible for us, and will it be a profitable venture for the city?
Can I get a third council person interested in that?
Isn't that what Charter provides us already?
We'd get the money.
Huh?
We'd get the money.
We'd
run it. We'd own it.
I guess I would just wonder what the cost would be to establish it.
Well, because stimulus money to fund it, that would be the idea. So is that worth a report, staff report?
I guess informationally.
Yeah.
That's all I'm asking, because I'm not sure if I'm sold on it. I just think that, you know, it's something let's look at, and if it looks cool, go, and if not, no.
All right, so we have support for that through our IT person, okay. Noah, Carla, anything? No? All right, Betty, closing quote.
I forgot it. I have to apologize.
Okay, Rick's got one.
I just happened to read it the other day. It's from Mark Twain. And he said, if you read the paper... No, I'm sorry. I blew that. If you don't read the paper, you're uninformed. If you do read the paper, you're misinformed.
And with that, we close. We're adjourned.
Bill's going to get you.
I didn't have much time to drink tonight. This will probably go down.